5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
TV Zone Plus, hosted by Paul Mount and Scott Holmes.
Hello, folks. This is episode 75 of TV Zone Plus podcast. And no, this is not another lockdown special. Paul is sat right across from me. Say hello, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
And I am sat right across from Paul. Say hello, Scott.
Hello, Scott.
Amazing.
Yes, we're back.
We're back in our full and powerful glory.
We're fully aroused.
Fully aroused, eh?
And ready to go. This is the moment which I thought would never come. Back face to face.
Face to face. No lockdown rule breaking or anything like that.
There are certain lockdown rules, but I think we're complying with them.
Well, we're in the same bubble.
We're in a bubble.
We're in the same bubble, as it were.
In fact, I think we are both bubbles.
We're both bubbles.
At the moment, because that's what lockdown does.
Obviously, being in Wales, we're no longer in lockdown, unfortunately for England.
Commiserations to those of you over the border who are still stuck in your lockdown for another 2 and a bit weeks. But it'll all be worth it in the end, we hope.
Well, we hope. I'm sure we'll be back in lockdown sooner rather than later.
Well, I think something will happen in the new year. But let's not start on a downer. Let's be more upbeat if we can.
Well, we did start upbeat. We started upbeat because we're together again.
Yay! to be honest, I thought it would never happen. The last few weeks have been such hard work, you know, keeping the spirits up and keeping positive. It just seems as if we were never going to get to do this again. We didn't like doing remote ones. We did remote ones, but
it just doesn't have the same vibe.
It doesn't have the same spark, the spontaneity. Apologies, incidentally, for anybody who listened to the last podcast, because there were some sound issues. I listened to a bit of it, and I thought, oh, no, I wouldn't listen to this all the way through.
Oh, no.
And because I was using one of those lapel mic type things, which I've used before on things I've done during lockdown.
It's a fancy word, lapel, isn't it?
It is a fancy word. It's not really that fancy. I suppose it is quite fancy if you don't wear coats and have lapels.
Fancy.
But anyway, I have one of those little lapel mics like you see them wearing on the TV shows. Normally it's been quite good, but for some reason there was a lot of feedback and sort of clicking and stuff. So anyway, it's just nice not to have to record like that again.
To be outside of your own home, inside our home.
It's very odd to be out again. As I was saying a few minutes ago before we started, our lockdown finished a week ago, and I've not really been out. I went once to visit somebody last Monday, but I think you get out of the habit of being out and about and doing things, and especially when all the things that you do aren't available, like
cinema
and coffee shops and just all those little social things aren't available. When they're back again, it's...
And the wintry weather is well on its way, and
winter draws on as well.
Settled.
And you sort of think, well, just, you know, what's the incentive to go out and do much? But
exactly.
you've got to make the effort, and I think making the effort makes things feel a little bit better. I already feel a little bit better now that I've done something, and I've got something to focus on. Because there's only... No matter how much entertainment you've got at home, you know, I do... I like a bit of variety, and I can watch films, I can watch television, I can read, I can
variety
do stuff with my family.
Is the spice of life.
I do miss having other things to do and other people to see. So anyway, we're back
with a jam-packed episode
A hell of a jam-packed episode.
Yeah.
It's going to be a bumper special with so much stuff to go through.
Well, before we do discuss about ourselves or what we've been up to, let's list what we're going to be talking about.
Let's do that. Well, we're going to start off on the... Well, obviously, we're going to update on what we have been up to, such as it is. Although I think we've pretty much done that, really. I've got on the itinerary Doctor Who fan rant, which isn't going to be quite that. It's going to be more of a Doctor Who warning. Just a couple of minutes to warn you away from certain things which have started appearing on certain news sites which are not true about Doctor Who.
Paul's Who Corner.
What am I? A little Who Corner. We're going to have some TV reviews and a bumper batch of TV reviews this episode. We're going to be talking about Truth Seekers, which is the new series from Nick Frost and Simon Pegg's production company, which is currently on Amazon Prime. Then we're going to be talking about one of Scott's particular favourites, season 2 of the new Star Wars spin-off, which is called
The Mandalorian.
Three episodes.
See, that opening bit always reminds me of Marvel. Do you have a similarity to one of Marvel's tunes?
Yeah, I do. Yes. It's just a great piece of music. Yeah. I love it. Really,
but yeah, we've got three episodes of season two of The Mandalorian and loads to talk about within those three.
Indeed.
We're also going to pay a little visit to Scott's Games Corner. We won't be talking about games, or we'll be talking about the release of the new consoles, which have corners. Then we're going to go jump into another TV review. That's three.
Another one?
That's three.
But that's too much for them. They won't be able to cope with all this. They won't be able to cope.
It's a four-hour show, ladies and gentlemen. Mm. Strap yourselves in. That might not be true because we're recording live, and I don't know how long it's going to be. I could have just lied to all of our listeners.
I think it's going to be a good 2 hours.
I think so.
Well, I say good 2 hours. It's going to be 2 hours, whether it's good or not. It's not really for us to judge.
But we're also going to be talking about a show that's on Netflix called To the Lake.
To the Lake, to the Lake. Now, I quite like the fact that Netflix has a lot of these European shows, and a lot of them sort of, you look at them and think, oh, subtitled, it's dubbed, I don't want to watch that. But there are some very good continental or foreign shows out there, and I've watched quite a few of them over the months. I think I did a column for Starburst, one of the TV Zone columns, a few months ago, doing a roundup of some of those shows.
You write for Starburst?
I write for Starburst. Didn't I mention that?
No.
Well, I better make that quite clear. My name is Paul Mount, and I write for Starburst magazine, which is, of course, the world's longest running magazine of. Come on.
It's a long gap you're leaving here, Paul.
Come on, yeah.
Of horror stuff and sci fi stuff. Of
fantasy. I think it's horror, sci-fi, and fantasy, isn't it?
I'm far off, eh?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Anyway, this show is called To the Lake, and quite topically, it's a sort of a pandemic thriller set in and around Moscow. And I think you watched it all, haven't you? You watched it
yes.
all?
Yes.
Excellent, well done.
Yes.
8 episodes, that's on Netflix now. We'll have a little chat about that. And then a quick mention for a show, which I'm flagging up, because it's probably not the sort of thing that our more mature readers or listeners would like to watch.
But it's still another TV review.
It's a genre show.
That's four of them.
Yeah, and it reminds me of the shows I used to watch when I was a kid. And it's good to see that kids are still having sort of adventure shows to stretch their imaginations in the way that mine was stretched back in the 60s and 70s. It's called Itch. It's based on a book by the broadcaster and DJ Simon Mayo, who's a favourite of mine. And it's an 10-part Australian series, which is available on BBC iPlayer. I think it's screening on Thursday afternoons as well, but the whole lot is on the iPlayer. So just want to give that a mention in case anybody out there's got kids that they can't drag away from watching unboxing videos on YouTube, might want them to watch something a bit more educational and imaginative. So Itch is our final TV review. Then we got a couple of obituaries, a huge obituary for a legend who passed away a couple of weeks ago, who is, of course,
Sean Connery.
Mr. James Bond, the first James Bond himself. And on the way here today, I was thinking about that. You've got to go, it's the first James Bond who's gone. But of course, Roger Moore went a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So we've lost a couple of
He was the first Bond that we had on the big screen.
Yeah.
We have lost Roger Moore as well. So
it's been a bad year for Bond, thinking about it, isn't it? Because the Bond film has slipped off the schedules the next year.
Yeah.
Earlier in the year, we lost Honor Blackman. And not so long ago, we lost Dame Diana Rigg. So we've lost the legendary Sean Connery. So we shall hopefully pay him a decent tribute a little bit later on. And I also want to mention Jeffrey Palmer, the British character actor who passed away last week. You might not know him particularly, but you will know him if I mention the Doctor Who episode Voyage of the Damned. He was the captain of the ship.
Okay.
And he was the one who caused it to crash with the asteroids and everything. But he was, and you would have seen him in previous Doctor Who stories, like the Silurians, that John Pertwee story. He was the first person to collapse from the Silurian plague.
Oh, right.
And he also appeared in The Mutants as like an ambassador. And so he was, well, but beyond all that, he was a fantastic British character actor who appeared in so many comedy series and dramas over the years. One of those sort of British character actors you don't get anymore. We've said this before when those sorts of well-known but not famous people have passed away. They're of that particular brand of actors who had a massive body of work but were never big star names. Although he had lots of star roles in comedy things, he wasn't somebody who was a big international name, if you like. Although he did actually appear in, I think it's Tomorrow Never Dies, with Judi Dench as M. He appeared as a military guy in that. So, I wanted to pay tribute to him.
So another Bond actor, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. But he was a favourite sort of actor of mine. He had that sort of long, sort of hangdog, you know, put-upon look about him. He was always the sort of the husband who had to put up with a lot of crap off people. And
I know what he feels like.
Yeah. I'm sure you do. And I'm also going to mention, totally out of our wheelhouse, Des O'Connor, who passed away yesterday. One of the great all-rounders of the light entertainment age of the 60s and 70s and even into the 80s and 90s. Because even though he's nothing to do with the sort of stuff we talk about, he's a bit of a legend in his own right. Then it's the return of something which I know everybody's been gasping for, the James Berridge Corner.
We've had a recording.
We've had a recording.
We've had a recording.
Because as we've been off the air for so long, I don't know if anybody's been listening to what we've been doing.
Is anybody out there?
We've had no emails. I've had no dog poop in the post.
Well, we've had no show.
We've done a few shows. We've tried, but nobody...
But we have no flair.
Yeah, that's true.
We have no flair.
We have no talent. So I don't know if anybody's waiting for us to come back. I don't know if our old listeners are still there. But Mr. Berridge is still there because he sent us a little message of some films he's been...
Thank you very much, James.
Yeah, cheers, James. We shall play that later on in the show. He talks about some of the films he's been watching during the lockdown. So if anybody out there wants to join in, please send us an email to tvzoneplus@mail.com. Get in touch with us. Welcome us back with open arms and open wallets.
Love us!
Tell us how much...
Tell
us how much you've missed us. Tell us how much you want our children. And what the ransom will be. And just say hello. Anything you've watched, just get in touch. You can send us a voice message, which we will play on the show, and that will bring you instant celebrity.
Yeah.
Instant. You'll be more famous than any of the people in I'm a Celebrity.
They actually be doing I'm a Celebrity,
yeah.
Exactly.
You'll
yeah.
be more famous than any of them.
There is a podcaster in I'm a Celebrity.
I'm sure there is.
Podcaster and book writer of something called Happy Mother, Happy Child. Obviously not on the caliber of our content.
Of course not.
You know, so Lord. I'll go on I'm a Celebrity next year.
Would one of them watch 8 episodes of a Russian pandemic fantasy drama? I don't think they would.
But they should.
They should. When they listen to the show, they will.
They'll be like, so anyway, hey,
send us a voice clip. You'll become an instant celebrity. You'll have the paparazzi camped outside your front door. They'll be rooting through your bins. You will become instantly infamous, a bit like us.
Paul. So, I didn't know we were allowed to lie to our listeners.
Shush now, we can do what we like. It's our show. Then we're going to finish off, I think, looking at the itinerary with some movie reviews, because even though the cinemas are closed, although I think Welsh cinemas are open, but there's bugger all on at the moment.
Yeah. Unless you want to watch something you've already seen before.
Yeah,
more than
lots of cartoons that probably wouldn't have gotten the cinema otherwise.
Cartoons!
Apologies again for all those people in England who are staring at closed cinemas, but... Mm. What you gonna do? But there are still films coming out on different streaming services, and we've had a chance to catch up with some which have either just come out or are shortly coming out. Specifically on Netflix, horror film called His House, which has been out for a couple of weeks. A short film called Host, which I watched last night, which is very, very good. It's a sort of a Zoom seance horror film. Very well done. And then a couple of...
I have seen Host.
Have you seen Host?
Thinking about it, yeah.
Only 50, 55 minutes.
Yeah, that's the one where it's all the girls and one guy.
Right.
I have seen those. I said to you earlier, I haven't seen it.
Well, it's got a sort of a bland sort of name, really, isn't it? Because there's been a few films called The Host, so you could easily have not watched it.
Well, when I say horror film and host, I tend to think of somebody taking someone over. Mm.
Yeah.
But this is, it's like a scout seance, a Zoom seance thing,
which is quite clever. I watched it last night because I wanted to watch something that wasn't too long because it was getting on about 10 o'clock. So I thought something shortish will see me up to my bed. Then we'll have some exclusive reviews of films which are coming out shortly. A couple of disaster movies, Skyfire, Greenland, and a horror film called Death of Me, which I watched over the weekend.
Skyfire just sounds like a James Bond title, doesn't it?
It does sound very James Bond, but it's not. Although it does have Jason Isaacs, who is an actor who... A lot of people think it should be James Bond because he's got that look about him. So that's what we're basically what we're talking about for the next however long it takes.
20,000 hours.
More than likely.
More than likely.
So anyway, Scott, what have you been up to these last few weeks since we last met? Because the last time I saw you would have been about 1974.
Well, since 1974, I've been doing what pretty much most people have been doing. Sitting on my backside, playing computer games, watching TV, with the occasional job hunting, which is going terribly.
Mm.
But apart from that...
It's not a good climate for job hunting, I should imagine, at
no.
the moment. With
no.
Businesses closing right, left and centre, people being laid off. What's some of the businesses I've heard in the last week or so that have got problems now? Various, I mean, even places like Costa are closing down stores and laying off people.
Well, God knows how small, single store family run businesses are doing,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know how people are keeping going these days. You know, we go to Pontypridd every now and then, and the amount of shutters that are down on a regular day is quite scary, really. That's me, nothing new, because what else is new to do?
Well, there is light at the end of the tunnel. As I say, there is talk of these vaccines, which they think will have an effect.
Mm.
But I was reading yesterday that it'll probably be next winter by the time things are back to what we describe as normal. So effectively 18 months life's been on pause. Which is quite a big thing, especially when you get to my age, when you haven't got much more than 18 months left, and suddenly 18 months is taken away from you.
You know you're going to outlive me.
I don't know about that.
You will. I'm too unhealthy.
Well, I couldn't possibly comment.
But what have you been up to, Mr. Paul?
Much the same, really. I've just been chilling at home, not been able to go out much. I've sort of got in the car and gone a few drives and things to give the car a bit of a stretch and stretch my legs, try to get a few walks in. But no,
Let the car know that you still love it.
You've got to show them that you care. just been entertaining myself. Not like that, missus. But I've been watching TV, catching up with some sleep. Just, been suffering from a lack of energy and a lack of motivation. But, I'm not the only one.
All out the window for you listeners.
Yeah, I'm going to try and remember that everybody is suffering in the same way, in different ways, and we're all trying to get through it as we can. So we're just getting...
It's lovely, just plodding along.
The hope that we're sort of maybe more than halfway through it. I don't know. We don't know what's around the corner. Probably another corner. But... we're just heading towards Christmas and trying to keep our peckers up, as they say.
Oh, yeah. Again.
That's all one can do. But no, just watching TV and haven't been reading a lot, which is a shame. I've got a few books stacked up I've got to read, which I want to get on with. I go through phases where I bomb through books and then don't touch them for a few weeks. So, because it's too easy just to sit and flop down in front of... One of the things I have been doing is sort of hooked on YouTube things.
Uh-oh.
And just stupid things. Like, people's reactions to Doctor Who episodes.
I've been doing that, but people's reactions to hearing Queen songs for the first time.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Don't get me, it is quite nice to see people's first time reactions.
Well, Doctor Who ones, I quite like looking at them because, of course, I know the history of Doctor Who so well, and you've got these people who don't know anything, not only about the history of Doctor Who, but they don't know the mechanics of what was going on behind the scenes. So there's one girl in particular who was working her way through Tom Baker. And she's just, Sarah Jane has just left, and she wasn't expecting that. It's quite nice to see people react with shock at things that are like second nature to me. I'm so used to that sort of stuff being part of my landscape and memory that it's interesting to watch people.
I had the same thing. I was watching this, they're a couple, and they were watching Queen videos and songs and stuff. And the one they were watching was like a little documentary, a piece of a documentary on Queen. And they were absolutely shocked to the core that Freddie was gay.
Yeah.
They were absolutely shocked to the core. I sat there and thought, what? Surely you know this. If you start listening to them and they said each video, this is really good, this is really good. You know, things like that, Freddie being gay, it's very out there
things
now.
Things like that do baffle me really though, because it's not as if he wasn't well. I've heard many of this. Must know basic things like that.
They must have heard about Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, but then I don't know, people don't seem to have inquiring minds anymore. They don't seem to pick up things. People seem to be very focused on their own lives, and anything else doesn't impinge on them very much. It's quite strange.
But any video I tend to watch whenever they watch, a lot of them tend to watch Somebody to Love live at Montreal 1981. It's a very good performance.
Yeah.
And a lot of people tend to do first reactions and they watch that. And a lot of the times they're surprised at how well Roger Taylor can sing, because he does the when they repeat somebody, Roger Taylor does the background stuff and they're all quite
somebody to love.
It's quite fun to see people switch. So I get that, watching stuff on YouTube like that. Yeah. I get that.
But then, I can understand that with the songs, but not knowing such incredibly well known background information about somebody who's so legendary stuns me. But then, I do watch a lot of quiz shows on TV, two in particular, and some of the things that people come up with are just staggering, terrifying, really. There's one last week, and I put these things on Facebook, so people might have seen them, which conservative politician was sometimes known by the initials IDS, And the girl said, Margaret Thatcher. Well, how would IDS?
The IDS initial,
okay, it's Ian Duncan Smith. Yeah. You might not know that. Yeah. But you wouldn't say Margaret Thatcher.
I wouldn't have known
But you wouldn't have said Margaret Thatcher. Because that's clearly not the initials.
I hate when people come up with an excuse to why they don't know it.
Yeah.
So you just don't know it.
Well, the excuse is always, it's before my time, which I can't bear.
Because if somebody asked me that question, I wouldn't be able to answer it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't make an excuse to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just genuinely don't know.
Well,
Then when they say Ian Duncan Smith, I go, right, makes sense.
Yeah.
I get that. Because I know who Ian Duncan Smith is. Yeah. You know, I see why he's there.
Yeah.
It just didn't pop
the information
in
is there, and I understand that. But you would not just say something which is clearly
Margaret Thatcher.
False.
What, the Iron Lady? That's what she was known as.
That's what he said. Oh, I thought Iron, perhaps it was sort of Iron something or other.
Iron Dame...
Well, she wasn't very popular, so it would probably be
something a bit more worse than that. Especially with the miners.
Yeah, let's not go there, especially on Wales. Don't mention that name on Wales. So I've been coasting around through YouTube. One thing I have been watching, which, I can't stop myself doing, is watching some of these people who go to charity shops and car boot sales and buy things and then sell them on eBay. Because I do a little bit of that, but not on the scale that these people do. And I just
some people live off it.
Oh, yeah. That's what amazed me. There's one bloke.
Some people live off it.
There's a bloke there with his wife. And they're a nice couple, a nice, friendly-looking couple. But it's his job. He's got this office. It's full of all this stuff that they buy. And it shows them going to jumble sales and something called jumble trails, which I've never heard of before, which are like boot sales that people have in their houses. And apparently they log on to these things. On Sunday, the car... There's a jumble trail, and they just drive around to people's houses. It's like garage sales in America.
Yeah.
They sit outside the houses with the tables and the old stuff, and they go from one to another. I'd never heard of them before, but apparently they're a thing. But it's just interesting, and they buy the stuff, and then they sell it at incredible prices. There was one, sorry to go on about this, it's not what you're here for, but I haven't spoken to anybody for 3 months, so I'm going to get this off my chest. They went to this jumble trail, and they bought 50-odd Jamie Oliver books, and... who's the other one? Nigella Lawson.
Yeah.
And they paid £2 for like 50 of these books. And he was on there last night. He's going, oh, I've sold 10 of these today, £15.50 each.
Wow.
Whoa. But he says, you know, this is how I make my living. And I don't know what his background is. Apparently him and his wife worked in retail, so whether they had shops and things in the past, but they've now just gone online. But you get other people as well. There's like teenagers and like kids in their 20s who are making a decent living by going around charity shops and jumble sales, picking up things. Electronics and games, things particularly that they know stuff about. So I've just found stuff like that quite fascinating to watch, even though I know I'm completely wasting what time I have left. So that's what I've been doing. Don't think less of me, listeners, for watching YouTube jumble trail people, because you're gonna do what you're gonna do to get through, aren't you?
On to more topical things, though, Paul.
Oh, before the topical thing, I think what we need now is a bloody jingle.
What do we want? TV Zone Plus. When do we want it? Every fortnight.
How I've missed the jingles.
On to more topical things, though.
Right.
Away from YouTube.
Mm.
Tell us about this Doctor Who
fan
rant you have.
Doctor Who fan rant. It's not so much... just a warning to anybody who might be taken in by things they may be reading somewhere. Doctor Who's back in production. Started filming a couple of weeks ago, apparently. And as was announced last week, it's going to be 8 episodes in the next series, which is perfectly understandable. I was reading an interview or feature with Chris Chibnall, the showrunner, who said... You know, well, Doctor Who's been off the air. They haven't been sitting on their backsides during lockdown. They've been planning how they're going to find a way to make this hugely ambitious, big-scale show in the current situation with all the pandemic and the COVID restrictions and all that sort of stuff to be COVID-safe. The only way they can do it is by taking longer to make the episodes, which means they're going to make less episodes. Yeah. So we're going to get 8 instead of the normal 10 or 11. I'm okay with that as long as they're all good episodes. You know, we don't want it to say it was only... 4 good episodes out of these 8. Let's hope that they're really good episodes. But that's become public knowledge now from an interview last week. The one thing that does concern me is that I've mentioned before about the YouTube Doctor Who people. There's this cabal of Doctor Who fans who loathe and detest Chris Chibnall. They loathe and detest Jodie Whittaker. They will do anything they can to discredit and discolour this particular era of Doctor Who. And I've not named names before. I've not mentioned people before. I've just said... please beware of these people. But I am going to name one of them now. Not in a defamatory way. There's not going to be any libel or anything. But there is a chap who calls himself the TARDIS Zone official on YouTube. What's official about it, I don't know, because I don't think the BBC have sanctioned him. And he used to come on screen. He's this funny-looking Irish guy. And he used to come on screen and basically spout bollocks about Doctor Who. He's the one who started all this nonsense last year. Chaos in Cardiff. Chris Chibnall's been sacked. Bradley Walsh has walked off set. And all this nonsense that... percolated down through the fan community, and people believed in it. And he always goes on about, I've got my sources have told me this, my sources have told me that. But it's all lies. Now, it's either lies that he is told, and he's so gullible he believes it all, or it's just stuff he makes up out of this malice that he's got towards the current Doctor Who production team. His name is Noel, by the way, so you might see his name. And the reason I'm mentioning him now is because other media outlets have started to pick up on what he's saying.
Uh-oh.
News from the new Doctor Who season, as reported by the TARDIS own official. And they come, and some of this stuff is such nonsense. It's clearly been made up. One of the things which he's been saying is that the BBC are going to get rid of the TARDIS as a police box. The reason for that is because of current negative connotations with the police. So what he's trying to suggest is that the BBC, publicly funded state broadcaster, is going to put out a comment that to kids watching a television programme, don't trust the police.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not going to happen.
No.
And even that alone must be enough for people to think, this is rubbish. So, and the other things, I think he said there was going to be a race of lesbian female Sontarans in one story. There was going to be an episode which the Doctor explores her bisexual nature. And he's purposely picked on all the things that he knows are going to aggravate the idiots.
He knows it's what either idiots want or what people want.
It's all laughable. It's all nonsense. However, my concern is that some media outlets online are now reporting it as news from the Doctor Who set. So I just wanted to put out a warning to anybody listening. If you read any of this stuff on certain sites, not Starburst, because we are far too professional to report on crap like that. But if you see the name, the TARDIS own official, you see the name Noel, don't know his last name, don't care. Ignore it, because it's just malicious lies.
Drivel
by somebody who wants to obsess about a TV show they don't like instead of just not watching it. So you might see that he may well come up with more stuff. Now he's been named and he gets some sort of fame out of it by appearing on websites, and he might go further and come up with more nonsense. Really, don't just take it all with a pinch of salt, take it with an ocean of salt, because it is all utter, malicious, nasty drivel. And I know that we've got listeners who probably know the TARDIS Zone YouTube channel and might be familiar with Noel. He may be a lovely bloke, but he's very nasty when it comes to Doctor Who. So, arm's length. Don't trust whatever you read. It comes from the TARDIS Zone official. Stay tuned for more information on that one. So I was going to really rant about that, so I'm glad I didn't now.
Well,
I was
going to,
you know, I don't want to give him too much. I mean, he comes up with all this stuff, but he's still only got about 500 followers on YouTube. So that's effectively the number of people who feel this strongly about this version of Doctor Who, that they want to, after 3 years now of Jodie Whittaker, they still want to try and bring it down and have a go at it. But there's not many of them, but they're very vocal, which is always the way. It's the same with Star Wars fandom, isn't it? Most people quite happily watch Star Wars fans, but there's the hardcore who, like, my childhood is ruined.
There's ones that believe that 4, 5, and 6 are the only ones that exist. And as much as they are the better ones, more exist out there.
They're, because they're so obsessed with getting their hatred out there, they won't bloody shut up about it. And that's the nasty side of science fiction fandom, which only seems to apply to science fiction fandom. You don't get Coronation Street fans going online going, oh, it's not been the same since Hilda Ogden left. They should bring her back. It was much better in those days. It's blah, blah. People just watch things and enjoy them. Someone about science fiction fans makes them.
We've said it before, we'll say it again. If you don't like it, just don't watch it.
It's not as if we're struggling for things to watch. There's plenty of choice on streaming services, anywhere you like. There's stuff to watch, so if you don't like something, no matter how much you may have liked it in the past, just give it a rest. Particularly with Doctor Who, which changes every few years. You don't like this version, we'll just leave it, wait for it to turn around, and it might be more to your liking in the future, or just get a life and stop watching it altogether. That's what I say. Anyway, that's my little Doctor Who warning for you all. I think it's time for a TV review, don't you?
I wholeheartedly agree.
Wholeheartedly agree. The first TV review in this sensational episode is Truthseekers. It's described as a comedy horror series created by Nick Frost, Simon Pegg, James Serafinowicz, and Nat Saunders, directed by Jim Field-Smith, and starring, it says here, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. I'm not sure I'd describe it as starring Simon Pegg.
No.
This is an 8-part, half-hour series. It's arrived on Amazon Prime on the 30th of October. And I will just say, first of all, the biggest disappointment of the year for me, as far as new TV shows are concerned.
Very much so.
very
excited for it.
I was really looking forward to it because, you know, I knew that Simon Pegg wasn't going to be in it much. I knew it was mainly going to be Nick Frost. And I like Nick Frost. I'm not convinced he's a leading man, really. I'm not sure he can really carry a thing. But he's very good as some, you know, best friends or comic relief or something like that. So I wasn't sure how it would go with him as the lead. But this just doesn't work. It's just not interesting.
No.
The concept of it is he plays a chap called Gus Roberts. He's a broadband installer for a company called Smile Internet. But he's also interested in paranormal investigations. I think he's got a YouTube channel called Truth Seekers. And he goes around to different locations where eerie supernatural things have happened and does videos and talks about them and tries to investigate them. In the first episode, he has a new partner. He's teamed up with a chap called Elton. We found out his name is actually Elton John.
Yeah.
Hilarious. It's probably the funniest joke in the first episode, but it's delivered so flatly. And they sort of team up to investigate things. And along the way, they meet up with a girl called Astrid, who's haunted by several ghosts. You've got Malcolm McDowell playing Richard, who is Gus's father, who's a bit sort of skeptical of all this and a bit of an old curmudgeon. And occasionally you get Simon Pegg turning up as Dave, who's Gus's boss, and occasionally they go into the office and have a little chat with him. And that's sort of it, really. There's sort of a conspiracy theory type thing about this character played by Julian Barrett from The Mighty Boosh. He plays somebody called Peter Toynbee, who's this sort of paranormal expert who's written books and has got some sort of thing going on.
It's like a cult.
Some sort of cult going on. But I've watched six episodes. I watched five. I actually fell asleep watching episode six. It was so uninteresting, and it's just so flat. Everything about it is flat and half-hearted.
On paper, it sounds like it would work.
It sounds like a real winner.
You know, regular guy with a little bit of interest in paranormal, pretty much accidentally stumbles upon a bunch of paranormal situations. You know, the very first episode, they go to this house, and this woman, she's a bit fresh, says she lives alone. Her internet keeps bobbing out, and they believe that it's because she's tampering with it to get some, you know, kind of human contact attention. But then there's this whole secret room with a dog that's still alive, and I think you described it right when you said about the Elton John joke. It was flat, and the whole thing just feels flat. Mm-hmm. You know, every single episode, the stories never go anywhere. It's not often I say this, but the episodes should be longer for what they do.
Yeah, you're right.
Because by the time the episode ends, it's not a continuing story, it's another story of a different
There's an arc, but each episode is a standalone story.
Yeah. I don't like being negative about you know, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, you know, especially when they put their heads together, they do really good stuff. But this was just unexciting, unexceptional, uninventive. It was even the script was just so flat. Everything was just, it just felt like you were just watching something to pass the time and not enjoying it.
The disappointing thing, it's one of the first things that Simon Pegg and Nick Frost have done under their production company. Mm. The other thing they did was that film Slaughterhouse Rules. Did you ever see that?
Is that where Simon Pegg is? He's a
teacher. He's a teacher in his school, and these creatures come out of this. It's not very good.
I know Simon Pegg did a film where he was a murderer. He got long hair.
Yeah, Inheritance. I haven't seen that. It's quite fancy seeing that.
Yeah, my folks have seen it. Yeah. They said it was actually very good.
Yeah, it does look good. I saw some clips of it. But no, this came out about 2 years ago, and it was set in this public school in England. This huge borehole opened near the school, and these sort of creatures came out. But that, a bit like this, I think it doesn't know what it wants to be.
Yeah.
It's a comedy. Is it a horror? Now, I know in some of the publicity before it came out, Nick Frost was doing chats about it, said, it's not a laugh-out-loud comedy. It's not a bang-bang-bang joke comedy. But then it's not horror. It's not a drama. There's nothing about it. Everything that's in it is like half-hearted.
Saying everything is not makes it flat.
Yeah.
You know, it really does. It's not this, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. Well, what is it then?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because when I watched it, I had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And I wanted to like it, really wanted to like it. And I watched it before you did. And I messaged you and I said, I'm really not impressed.
Yeah.
You were a bit skeptical of me saying, I'm really not impressed. And then you messaged me and just said, like, okay,
to
see why. And it is a shame because it's a great concept. Like I said, on paper, it should work.
Yeah.
But for some reason, nothing in this show just makes you go, that was good.
No.
But nothing in the show makes you go, that was awful. Well, it's just such a mediocre film.
I mentioned program. That Elton John sort of thing. His book's called Elton.
Mm.
And he goes to the house and he introduces him to the old woman in the house. Oh, this is my assistant, Elton. And he goes, yeah, Elton John. And they sort of look. And I thought, really, is this the best that the people who made Shaun of the Dead can do now?
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, and the problem is with them, they got spaced in Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, which was so brilliant. Such a high bar to reach. And they've not reached it since, I don't think, in anything they've done. I mean, Simon Pegg obviously has gone into more drama and different types of things. But I think what it misses is Edgar Wright's direction. I think you've punched a hole in this. Because it's so lifeless. The whole look of it is drab. They use this one little sting of incidental music all the time. It's the same little bit.
Mm.
And it just seems very, very thrown together. Well, I know it wasn't. I know they spent a lot of time preparing it. And it looks, it's well made. But there's just things that... just unbelievable. There's one episode which is about the Beast of Bodmin.
Yeah.
Like this devil dog type thing. It's clear they didn't go anywhere near Bodmin. It's a field near London somewhere. And that's forgotten straight away because they get involved with this girl who's created this thing. And you think, what's the point in doing
what's
this?
The point?
And the worst one for me was the one where they go to a Comic-Con. And I'm disappointed because they have such a background steeped in this stuff. They fall into that old cliche. They go to a Comic-Con and everybody's got... unrecognisable costumes on that, whether licensing reasons they can't have people dressed as Superman and Batman, probably licensing. There's just people dressed in silly costumes to make people look stupid, and there's the whole subplot about Elton's sister who's a bit agoraphobic, but she's obsessed with making a Dalek costume for this convention, and she makes this Dalek costume which looks like a Dalek, but it's not a decent Dalek costume, and it wins the cosplay award. Well, that wouldn't happen. No, I'm not. I don't know much about cosplay, but I know that at conventions this year, people have got studio accurate Daleks that look like proper Daleks, and they're the sort of things that win awards, not this thing that's been knocked together out of bits of old cardboard. Just stuff like that make me think they know better than that. They know that world better than they're depicting it dramatically. And I just didn't find... the main thing is I just don't find the story interesting. I don't care what this...
None of the characters were interesting.
Nobody was likeable.
The thing is, Nick Frost was playing Nick Frost.
Yeah.
In this as well, you know, when he played like Ed and Danny and stuff, he had a character. Yeah. He had the character down. Yeah. I could just see Nick Frost reading his lines when he was performing this. It just wasn't the greatest performance.
It's just a lifeless series. It never.
Yeah, which is ironic considering it's about life.
Yeah,
it's about itself. It's about the soul moving on and stuff. It's got all that background stuff about
life
the
after
soul
death and stuff, but it's. So disappointing. I mean, I might go back to it to finish it because I don't like to leave things. But last night, for instance, like I said, I had an hour or so. I thought, I suppose I could finish Truth Seekers. But I watched Host instead because I just...
because you knew it was probably going to be more entertaining.
Yeah, it was. So, very disappointing.
Yeah. Out of 10? I'm going for a 4.
I'm going to go for a 4. Yeah. I would have wanted to give it a 5, but would suggest that it's sort of okay, but I don't think it is.
The fact that I couldn't finish it. If I could finish it, it would have been a 5, an average show at best.
Yeah.
But I couldn't even finish it because it was quite boring. And I hate saying that about this production company, but it was quite boring.
I didn't believe it. I didn't believe what I was watching. And the fact that it didn't, you know... And they said, it's not a comedy, it's sort of a drama. Well... you know, it's not any of those things.
It's
as nothing. Far as I can
it's,
see.
It's almost like it's nothing, and it just plods along.
Yeah,
quite disappointed.
But it is the big TV disappointment of the year for me. Which is a shame because it's one of those things I was thinking, oh, that's going to be something to look forward to later in the year. But it's so I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10 as well.
10, because it's less than average.
Yeah, I mean, I think they want to do a second series and a third series. Well, I hope that if they do, they sort of
find their feet, maybe
kick it up its ass a bit. I mean, the first couple of episodes, I gave it the benefit of the doubt. I think, well, sometimes these things take a few weeks, a few episodes, but by episode 5 or 6, they're still plodding. It's just a plodding, dull, rather dull series. So it's on Amazon Prime if you feel so inclined to catch up with it. Don't take our word for it. Have a look. Some people might like it. If you've been watching it and you're enjoying it, tell us why. Have we missed something? Have we got the wrong mindset or something? But it's on Amazon Prime now, Truth Seekers, if you fancy a look at... something not very good.
Talking about something that's not very good.
Huh?
Let's move on to something that's better.
Oh yeah, okay.
It's The Mandalorian.
Ba 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 ba.
It has returned for its season 2, and we got it at the same time as everyone else. That's exciting.
So the Mandalorian has returned after being tasked with finding the child, or Baby Yoda,
Baby Yoda.
You all want to know it as. Been tasked with finding its own kind, and this is the continuation adventure of the Mandalorian. He is currently hunting for other Mandalorians. He's feeling a bit lonely and needs a little bit of assistance. And it picks up quite quickly after the first season. Mandalorian's on Tatooine in the opening. He's looking for a possible Mandalorian on Tatooine. Now, there is a Mandalorian that we know was on Tatooine in episode 6 of the Star Wars trilogy, which is Boba Fett.
Oh, you know that.
He's basically on the trail of said character. Blew me away this season. Continued to like beat the expectations. Loved the first season and was very nervous about the second season because, you know, the second season can always go up or down. This has gone way, way up. Absolutely fantastic. Episode 1, 2, and 3. I think I watched episode 2 3 times.
Because it
was really good.
I watched it twice.
Thoroughly enjoyed that one. So, yeah, that's The Mandalorian. Go and watch it. Well done. Thank you.
Okay. You got somewhere to go? Somewhere to be?
No, it's just nothing else needs to be said about how fantastic it is.
Well, there we are. That's The Mandalorian.
With Mandalorian, though, I've been a bit nervous about yourself because you're not a Star Wars
fan. I'm not
fan,
a Star Wars
like
geek,
myself.
Though.
It's highly likely I'm going to enjoy The Mandalorian, whether it gets really, really bad or not.
Well, let me say what I think about it now, and I'll probably do it at more length than you. I enjoyed the first series. Mm. When the second series was coming on, I realised I hadn't seen the last episode of the first series.
Really?
No, I thought, what's this?
What?
So I stopped it. Went back and watched all the first series again to get
you did
the,
tell me you were going to do
yeah,
that.
Which I was
quite
which I was going
you.
To do, and I did, and I really enjoyed it. But I had an arm's length. I've always got that arm's length thing with Star Wars. Mm. I enjoy it, but I don't love it. I don't embrace it. And that's because I didn't grow up with it.
Yeah.
You did. I grew up with Doctor Who, and that's always my first thing. And I remember when Star Wars arrived, it was like a threat to Doctor Who, because people were talking about Star Wars. People like this more than Doctor Who. I can't have that. And I think I've always had that slight distance. So I've... But I've watched the films, and I've enjoyed them, but always as adventure films, space adventure films, but that's it. I don't take it away with me. I don't worry about, oh my God, they've raped my childhood, they've ruined this, they've done that, whatever they've done. I just think, well, I enjoyed that. I've never embraced it in that way. I just want to watch something which I enjoy. And that's nice, because it's, you know, you get so worked up about the continuity of these things. It's nice to think, I'm just going to watch this and enjoy it. But that's how I feel about The Mandalorian. And I love the first series. I thought it was great. Second series is better, though. It's more of the same, but the bar is a bit higher.
Yeah.
And it seems a bit better. And I think it was episode 2, and I think I sent you a message. Episode 2 is fucking great.
Yes.
Because it had a nice planet, and then it had giant spiders. You give me that, and I'm happy. That's all I want from
it ticked the mount boxes.
Yes. It's got great big monsters. It's got a spaceship crashing on a nice planet. Yeah. Love it.
And it all looked absolutely fantastic.
It looked fantastic.
Well.
But that particular episode... It was directed by Peyton Reed, who does the Ant-Man films. And you could see why they chose him, because he had lots of insecty things, and he's obviously good with that sort of special effects stuff. But I was watching that one particular episode, and it just all went, click. Oh, yeah, this is brilliant.
This is great.
This is great, and I get this, and I get this. It's still very much I really enjoy this. I'm not going to say I'm not going to rush off and watch all the Star Wars films and buy the books, but I love this for what it is. And what it is for me... It's a great big space adventure, and it does what I've always wanted Star Wars to do. It's still all there. That's all. I understand all the stuff about the Force and the Jedi and all that in the background. But it gets away from that sort of Rebels versus...
Empire.
The Empire stuff, which what all the Star Wars films are basically all about, Rebels versus the Empire. This explores different facets of the universe. And I've always said that about Star Wars. It's a big old universe. So is other bits of it. Don't keep going back to the same things. And this is what that does. Okay, you get stormtroopers coming in here and there.
Which is amazing.
And you get lots of references that I'm sure 50% of the script is right above my head.
Tons of, especially in the third episode, it was full of...
Yeah. And I gathered that as I was watching, I thought, oh, this is clear. These characters clearly have importance in the Star Wars universe. But not knowing about that didn't spoil my enjoyment of it.
No, and that's what's really good about it.
Which is the cleverness, the part of it, because they've obviously crafted it in a way that hopefully... Star Wars, the less cynical Star Wars fans will embrace it. People who don't know all the ins and outs will embrace it as well. And I just, you know, this bloke in a spaceship, every episode he goes somewhere different, meets some new monster. I love the monsters are great. I love a monster. And there's some great monsters in this, that Tremors type thing in the first episode, which was a... What was
the
it?
The first that? Episode, the Crate Dragon.
The what's it called?
Crate Dragon.
Crate Dragon.
Which is Crate Dragons are actually you see a skeleton of it in A New Hope.
Yeah.
In Star Wars A New Hope. Yeah. They're indigenous Tatooine, and C-3PO is wandering through the desert quite close to the stars before he gets picked up by the Sandcrawler and Jawas, and he's a big skeleton. And that's a Crate Dragon.
Okay, right.
And yeah, it was really, really good to actually see one in action as well. See one like.
And of course, in episode one, we had
Timothy Olyphant,
which rhymes with elephant.
Elephant. I do like. I
was that character.
No,
that was a new character.
A completely new character. No reference to my knowledge, anyway. Yeah. No reference to anything else. But he was wearing the armor of Boba Fett,
right?
Because Boba Fett fell into the Sarlacc pit quite embarrassingly by getting hit by a blind man. And
it can happen.
Well, the thing is, after, because his jetpack got hit, and his jetpack shot him forward, he hit the side of Jabba's barge and fell in. Now, the Sarlacc pit will digest you over 1,000 years. That's what happens. So he, from what I can assume, due to the mysterious man on the mountain, Boba Fett has escaped.
Right.
His armor's been sold off for whatever reason, which is why they believe that there was a Mandalorian on Tatooine. So it's possible that Boba Fett had survived if this character, this mysterious figure, is Boba Fett. The Crate Dragon, seeing that in action was great. It was a very, very Wild West theme,
the whole series is really, the whole thing is.
It was this episode that got me, though, because the Sand People, the Tusken Raiders, they were like the Indians. And then you had this small sort of town of cowboys, and they had to work together.
I think you mean Native Americans. You're not really allowed to say Indians anymore.
Are you not?
Native Americans.
Okay. Yeah. Native Americans.
Thanks.
It was kind of like a very strong Western film, but taking down this giant sort of worm creature. Yeah. It was so cool. Really, really loved it.
I mean, that's the aesthetic. I like the whole Western thing. I mean, the music sets it all up. And he's very much the man with no name. You know, this mysterious stranger who swoops in, does things and swoops off again.
His name's not The Mandalorian.
No.
His name's not Mando.
Yeah.
But that's what he's known as.
That's what he's known as,
because he's the most prominent of the Mandalorians, because you've seen loads of them.
But I love, I love that sort of... this space fantasy. It's not science fiction. As such, I would call it more space fantasy adventure, because I love, in that second episode where they're attacked by the spiders and the ship is damaged, and he just goes outside with the solar lamp. I've done the repairs. There's none of the science fiction gobbledygook you get in some things. I've reattached
the rehabilitation of this trip to Libidido.
The Archon control has now been factored into the. It's just I fixed it with a soldering iron, and they go off. And I just like that randomness of it. It's about the adventure, and it's about going out there, and it's got a little bit of Doctor Who to it. They go into strange places and meet strange creatures.
But interesting little tidbit as well. The two X-Wing pilots in episode two.
Yeah.
The one pilot was one of the artistic producers for.
Yes, I think
who worked on Rebels.
Yeah.
Who did the spiders in the Rebels show, because that's where we've seen these spider creatures before. They're in the Rebels TV show, and it was nice to see them exactly as they are in Rebels. So it's great to see these kind of creatures being brought into the mainstream, but not to the point where it's like you need to know they've been in the mainstream. I mean, the third episode had a heck of a lot more of a connection. I always forget her name. But the female Mandalorian,
Katie Sackhoff.
From
Battlestar
Galactica. Name again.
Can't think of the character's name.
But she's played a character who has appeared in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And she is the sister of Satine.
Yeah.
Satine was the leader of the planet Mandalore, trying to bring peace. She wanted peace, but Mandalore's been a very war-based planet. And she was part of the Death Watch, who didn't want that, so she was against them. So it was interesting to see that brought back.
But the fact that I didn't know that doesn't mean I feel left out particularly, because they explained what they needed to explain about the character in that episode. So the fact that there's a backstory and a history from things I've never seen, and let's face it, will never see, doesn't matter to me, because I watched it on the level
of
that
episode.
But
it's great for the fans
that
do know it.
Which is great, because
you go,
terrific.
Whoa, look at that.
But again, out in the sea, with this
Mon Cala was the planet that they were on.
Oh, right,
okay. Where the Mon Cala is there. Also, another little tidbit as well. In there's a game of Star Wars Battlefront 2 where you play as a female, a special squads member in the Empire, and you move over into the thing. But she was asked to be in the series.
Okay.
But only a very small piece. But do you know when the ship's landing and you've got the Mon Calamarian? But they've got loads of that because Mark Hamill was in the first season.
Yeah.
As Dinah, robot behind the bar, yeah, when he goes to Tatooine for the first time. So they've got loads of little bits of. I think in the one with Bill Burr.
Yeah.
They go into the control room, and you've got that guy who's at the controls.
Yeah.
That guy voices Anakin Skywalker in the Clone Wars animated series. So there's loads of them.
Yeah. It's nice that they keep kind of bringing them in. But that's fine, but can you pick up on stuff like that? It doesn't mean anything to me, but it doesn't matter to me. I can still watch the episode without knowing that.
It doesn't destroy the story.
I think it was the last episode of the first series where those two stormtroopers captured... One of them was Jason Sudeikis, wasn't he?
Yeah, and the other one was Kathleen Kennedy.
I can't remember. It was
somebody high up in the Star Wars thing. Like, so that's quite fun. I'll be intrigued to see what they do in the next episode because the name Ahsoka Tano has been mentioned. Yeah. Ahsoka Tano was Anakin Skywalker's Padawan during the Clone Wars because he was, Anakin was like, he never made the rank of master. But because of the Clone Wars, they had to take different steps, so he should never have had a Padawan at that point, but they needed all they can get. So Ahsoka was on there. During the Clone Wars, she starts to notice Anakin being a little bit less...
She is in it. She's played by the character who does the voice in the animated series, apparently.
Oh, is she?
It's the same actress who's playing live action.
I haven't read that.
Spoiler!
I'm very much looking forward to it, though, because she's a very good character. She actually leaves the Jedi Order before Order 66 and stuff takes place, because they went on a particular mission. They did things correctly. She did what was right, but not in the eyes of the Jedi. So she was like, I'm off then. Then she would come back in Rebels, and Rebels is happening in between episode 3 and 4. So that's, the Rebels, these Rebel characters, they're leading to help the Rebel Alliance and make it what it is. So the last time we saw her, she was there, so she's going to be a bit older in this now because this is set after episode 6. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see her. She's a very good character as well.
Meanwhile, let's talk about episode 2 again. The Passenger, because it had an ice planet and giant spiders. You can't go wrong, can you?
An adorable masochist.
And the frog. We must talk about the controversy that has sprung up the last few days about the frog.
Yeah.
In the episode.
Frog lady.
Frog lady. The plot basically is this frog lady is carrying her eggs and like a...
Unfertilized
eggs in this big sort of transparent thing. The last of her line. The Mandalorian is employed to take her across to... meet up with their mates so they can
with payment to they're going to say where they've seen new
these little eggs floating in there, and the child just steals the eggs and eats them, which is very funny.
Yeah,
and in fact, I love the bit as well where the Mandalorian is trying to fix the spaceship, and there's these sort of egg type things on the planet. He just goes up and opens one and just eats this thing in it. He'll eat anything, and of course that kicks off the whole spider awakening thing.
Yeah,
but over the weekend now there's just been this massive controversy about how cruel it is that the child was eating these eggs. And people were saying it was really offensive. I mean, what can you say?
Well, the response from the producer was, so the child was eating the eggs just like you eat unfertilized chicken eggs, I believe. Yeah. You know, because, that's all it was. But you know the biggest point you need to make with this? It's not real.
It's a space adventure series. It's not actually real. It's not a reality show. It's not a...
If it was real, let's look at it this way. You have a baby who's looking for food all the time because babies are hungry, finds these things, pops it in their mouth. Guarantee you, if you have a child, that child has tried to put something they shouldn't have in their mouth.
Yeah.
And if the Mandalorian was there, sitting there going, God, go on, have another one. Go on, have another one. But he wasn't. You know, the Mandalorian is like a guardian to the child, almost like a parent.
Yeah.
And he's acting as such. He's like, I'll look after you. Don't do that. Don't eat that. And he's always telling him, don't do these things. But he's a child. He's going to do these things. And, it just blows that aspect right on there. So the fact that this child is eating the eggs, it's funny because it's like, oh, okay, last of the race, and that baby's just eating them. Yeah. If it was being allowed or something, then you'd be a bit more like, oh, Mando's a bit of a dick. But yeah. It's a child doing it, and it's constantly trying to grab. It's always hungry. It keeps eating things, keeps eating the spiders, keeps, you know.
But what are we talking? I've just gone online and looked at some of the comments that people made, and it's just beggars the imagination. It's kind of fucked up, to be honest.
Really?
He says they better have a twist next week where he was protecting the eggs, otherwise I'm going to end up hating Baby Yoda. Then what's the point of watching the show? But making me wait a week to find out if the child is evil is still fucked up.
It's not evil, it's a baby just eating.
Love the show, but there was something disturbing about watching Baby Yoda eat the children of a mother who said they were the last of their kind.
It's meant to be, though. Yeah. It's meant to be disturbing. That was the whole point. It's disturbing in a comedic way of like, oh.
Somebody else says, I would punt Baby Yoda across the country if I could.
No, you wouldn't. Too adorable. And plus, somebody, he just used the force on you. So
there was somebody who said, I don't understand. Somebody who said that they've been going through IVF treatments for years.
Oh,
and they found it really offensive then that this had come along and made light of. And yeah, I feel very sorry for people who are struggling in those situations. But please, separate your life with a space adventure in which a small alien eats eggs.
Me and my wife, we're experiencing that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I'm not offended by it. I didn't look to be offended by it.
Well, this is the age-old thing, and if people now are just looking for anything, it's like they can be offended. People do want to be offended because it gives them a chance to go on social media, tell everybody how offended they are, and then get a reaction from the people who made the thing. And that's what they want to do.
Don't let it sour a fantastic series.
It's a great series, and
filmed brilliantly, performed brilliantly, the action pieces, the quieter pieces, and it's not an hour long. So
how do you feel then? Because this year, the series arrived in March over here, but let's face it, you'd already seen it. You'd watched it all in one go.
Yeah.
Now we're getting it drip-fed week by week. I know you're a person who likes to binge.
Yeah.
But do you like having it week by week?
I love it because I'm excited for the next episode now. I haven't watched them all and gone, right, that's that, then wait till next year.
Yeah.
You know, I do like to binge, but I also enjoy the aspect of the anticipation for the next episode. I can't wait for the next episode.
I'm looking forward to it because I know that Friday morning
I
will sit down and with my breakfast and watch a new episode of a show which I really enjoy, which is half an hour long, hasn't got lots of padding in it, gets in, gets the job done, we'll have some cool monsters and a spaceship, and I like that.
I got no problem with the non-binging thing. But this day and age, obviously, people don't want to binge.
There are people who just literally, I want it all, I want it all now. Well,
Queen Song.
That's right. But sometimes you can't. You just got to wait. Marks out of 10 for The Mandalorian.
10 out of 10.
Okay.
Every episode so far. Yeah. Thoroughly enjoyed every single episode. Yeah. 10 out of 10.
I'm going to give it 9 out of 10.
Nah, scandalous.
No, that's good. I think you're fine. Oh, please don't go on social media and slag me off.
TV's own plus podcast. Paul Mount said 9 out of 10. Who the fuck does he think he is?
He's a twat. You have no idea.
Scumbag.
I'm used to that. Don't worry.
9 out of 10 is nice.
I'm tempted to give it a 10, but I'm giving it 9 just because I know there's lots of stuff. I like to know. I like to be able to understand it all. I know there's lots of stuff that I don't know. But as a great space adventure, it's just fun.
Yeah,
and that's really what I want from something like that.
it's always impressive to make such a likable character that always wears a helmet. And he is as much as he's, especially at the beginning, he's quite a stone-faced sort of hunter, mercenary.
Well, it is interesting to have a series of the lead character you don't see their face, you don't have, but yet you still understand him and still empathize. And I love
it's the little head tilt.
I love the jetpack stuff. I thought in the last episode. The last episode, episode 3.
Oh, right,
he gets attacked and they steal the jetpack.
Yeah.
And he just lets the blood fly and he switches it off.
That was the first episode.
Was that the first or the third?
He gets attacked at the start of the episode.
So there was something like that in the third one as well, though, wasn't there? The most recent one, I'm sure there was.
I have to rewatch it again. On that third episode, I just want to point out the fantastic moment, though, where he runs out and he's getting hit. Just to throw the things and they come out shooting. Yeah. It just looks spectacular.
I like the flamethrower on his hand as well. That's great. I would love one of them.
Again, it's a very Mandalorian type thing to have. Jango Fett had one, Boba Fett had one.
No, it's great. It's just great fun. And I'm hoping that the embittered Star Wars fans will be enjoying this as well. It'll give them a chance to stop grizzling about everything.
What I do like as well is the little touches. Mm-hmm. Like when they land on Mon Cal in the third episode, ship lands, goes into the water. I like that, you know, because it didn't need it.
No, that's
but
right.
It's quite fun to see it.
When you think of the effort they must have gone to create those visual effects, yeah. And a word for the visual effects incidentally, they're incredible, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, everything about it. It's obviously made by people who are doing their best work.
They also used I don't know if this is meant to be an Easter egg or what, or if they just thought it worked, but they also used a very cheeky sound bit from the original trilogy.
All right.
In the moment where Luke gets shot down on Hoth in Empire, right. And the AT-AT walker's coming towards him, going to step on the ship.
Yeah.
When the crane was picking him up, they used the mechanical noise that they used in that scene.
Yeah.
But that's just being a massive Star Wars nerd.
That's the obscurest of Easter eggs, really, isn't it?
But it was the exact same sound of when the leg goes up and comes down on top of the ship. Yeah. The crane was making that same noise. And that's, Star Wars nerding out. Like.
I'd like to think that was just a convenient sound effect that they used, but I suspect there was more.
Well, I've not heard it in any of the other episodes. It was just that particular bit. So
yeah, as The Mandalorian is on Disney Plus at the moment. The entire first series is still there. And new episodes drop every Friday at about 8 o'clock in the morning. Is it
roughly 8 o'clock, something like that.
And there's 5 more to go, and I'm thoroughly looking forward to it. Apparently, the third series will arrive about the same time as next year, because that's the way they film it, of course.
Mm.
It's incredible. You know about it because you wrote about it for something.
Yeah.
But it's this screen technique they use. It all looks as if it's on location, all these places. Yeah. But it's all done in studios with things performed in front of pre-filmed. It's just incredible.
It's very incredible.
Buggers my mind. Which is how they can make it fairly quickly. But it doesn't look like something that's just thrown together.
No.
It's very, very intricately made. Great. So it's on Disney Plus now. Just watch it, for God's sake.
Yeah.
If you are watching it, why not tell us what you think of it?
About it.
You can email us. tvzoneplus@mail.com. You'll find us on Facebook. Just let us know what you think of The Mandalorian.
Talk to us,
anything.
Please
say hello. Let us know you love us.
We've missed you we know you've missed us.
I think on that bombshell, it's time to take a little peek into Scott's Games Corner.
Okay, so just a quick little Games Corner today. I just want to have a quick chat about the release of the PS5 and the new Xbox. Now, both consoles have been released. People have pre-ordered them, been receiving them. And the reason why I don't have one of either of these consoles, because I like to think I'm a little bit smarter. Because once you pre-order one of these consoles, you get it. You have about 5 games that have been released for this console. And then you can play all the back catalogue ones that you've already got a console for. But the biggest reason is console faults. Particularly the PS5 has had massive problems with the release, where people are not any longer able to use their PlayStation 5 consoles. This is why you don't pre-order your console, because they always come out with technological issues, which is why you always get the PS4, PS4 Slim, PS4 Pro, or you get the PlayStation 2 Slimline, or you get the Xbox and the Xbox 360, and then you get the Xbox 360 Elite. Always wait a little bit before, because it gives them time to work out the kinks. The PlayStation 5, the problems that I've heard of is severe overheating, where it pops up on the screen saying PlayStation overheating, must shut down, and it happens almost every time you turn it on. If you do get it turned on, some people are saying that out of the collection of games that they've had to start with, only one of them works, because the rest of them, it just won't boot up. Xbox, not so many problems, but again, overheating. The fans just aren't getting enough of an overdrive to be able to do what they need to do. So forewarning from myself, you know, get excited for a PS5 and Xbox. You know, I'm very excited. I'll be planning on getting a PS5, but I'm using my common sense. Wait before you get it. Maybe wait till after Christmas, because that's where they release it now, so they can get the Christmas sales. But wait till after Christmas. Let them get back all the duds that haven't worked, and there's been a lot of them, especially for PS5. Let them fix the problem, and then maybe look into buying a new console. You know, the games are fantastic for it, but again, it's not a big update from the PS4. They claim it's a massive update, but the loading times are just quicker, which is always nice. graphics aren't a big change unless you have a 4K TV. So if you don't have a 4K TV, there's no point. I don't have a 4K TV, so I'm not greatly in a rush. You know, I'll get a console when new games that I'm interested in are coming out. You know, so it's just a bit of a heads up warning for anybody that's looking into getting them. Give yourself a bit of time. Let them fix any issues with the current consoles. Let other people buy them. Find out that it's not working so you don't end up wasting all your money and then getting upset because you can't play your new console. Especially these days when if you have a PS4, you tend to trade in your console to knock a bit of money off the new one. So when your PS5 breaks, you might sit there and think, well, I don't even have a PS4 to play anymore.
Yeah.
Sad times. So yeah, just that little update for everybody. Be a bit aware, give it time, and let the consoles have their breakdowns.
There we are. You've heard it from the horse's mouth. Listen to this kid. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to all this crap. I mean, all this stuff. Wait before you buy this.
Nice save.
Wait before you buy this Game Boy thing he's talking about.
Game Boy
and then
thing.
Buy it when it's cheaper or something. Whatever he said.
Game Boy hasn't been out since the 80s and 90s.
Yeah,
and
you say that. I still play with mine.
Well, that's not for this podcast, Paul.
Actually, my Game Boy is chained up in my garage. He doesn't like being called a boy either, but he's quite game. Anyway, that's enough of that. Anything else?
The darkness of Paul's inside life.
It's a very strange place, full of cobwebs and corpses. Anything else in your corner today?
No, that's it. I haven't really been playing any new games, to be honest, because with the PS5 coming out, not many games are being released for the PS4. So it's been a little bit dry on the new game front.
No, nothing else would have done. You didn't have to go into that detail. Thank you very much. That was Scott's Games Corner.
It's a very short nap for you this time, wasn't it? Normally naps.
I barely got my
out all the snoring.
I barely got my eyes closed there. It's hardly worth doing. Fabulous. There we are. More games news soon, I suspect. Time for another TV review. To the lake ski, it should be called, really. This is a Russian web television series.
Because it's Russian?
Yeah, I know. How racist. This actually first appeared on the Russian channel Premiere in November of last year, and it's arrived on Netflix. I'm not sure when it arrived on Netflix. I am actually.
But it has arrived on
Netflix. I do actually know. It was arrived on October the 8th, so it's quite a recent series. It's based on a book called Von Gozero, which is written by Russian writer not with these teeth, which is written by somebody called Yana Wagner, which I thought was a makeup car. There we are. This is an 8-part series. It might not be ideal viewing at the moment because it's about a pandemic.
It's a very close home hit.
Yeah, it's quite home. It's a bit uncomfortable in places. It's starts off in Moscow, where a strange and unknown deadly new virus is spreading across the community, the main symptoms of which are coughing and a sort of reddening of the eyes, and after 3 or 4 days people just die. So it's not like a zombie virus, it's not like a survivor's thing. People just die of this thing after a few days.
If you contract it, you're likely to pass away.
It's arrived so quickly nobody knows how to resist it or cure it. The whole capital is covered by this epidemic in the end. And it becomes effectively a city of the dead as society has collapsed. And it's basically a story about two families, Sergei and his new partner, who's pregnant.
Sergei.
I call him
just
Sergei.
Sounds like you say it. Someone's called Jay and they're Sir.
I call him Sergei.
Hello, Sergei.
I call him
how
Sergei.
Are you?
Sergei. With his. Oh, since when you been king of fucking Russia? Oh, sorry.
Well, that was salty.
Apologise for my language, really. Ooh, he does irritate me.
Well,
can we do a remote podcast next time, please? Anyway, Sergei. That's right.
Sergei.
He's not gay.
Sergei.
Oh, Sergei. Oh, yeah, Sergei. You're Sergei. Anyway, he, along with his new...
No offence intended. No, good Lord, no.
Anyway, he and his new lover and his autistic son and... Her autistic son. Anyway, it's a mixed bag of people. There's these two families who bundle up with the cars to try and get out of Moscow to go to the lake, where one of the bloke who lives next door, the family, this sort of rather arrogant business bloke, has got a house up in the lake which he thinks will offer them sanctuary from what's going on. And across the 8 episodes, it's basically the story of their attempt to travel hundreds of miles to this refuge and it's what happens, the things that happen on the way, the terrible things that they encounter, the obstacles that pop up in their paths. I enjoyed this very much. I think it peters out a little bit towards the end, because it's not so much about the pandemic. That's the background, the backdrop to it. It's not about that. It's more about these people, and it's that classic story, which I like.
It's very much how the Triffids are the background of the day of the Triffids. Yeah, it's more about
it's
the
a threat
survive.
That's there, and they've got to try and keep away from it. So obviously they want to keep away from people who are infected, because there is no cure, and they know what's going to happen. But it's that story about how society collapses and how people degenerate because they want to survive. The people that they meet can be fairly savage, and they have to do some difficult things themselves to survive. So it's very much a story of human conflict in between these different characters and the people that they meet.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Very much so, yeah. I was very surprised because I don't mind dubbed subtitle films, programs, and so on and so forth, but I tend to... My mind flitters a lot when, especially when it's subtitled, like I forget that I'm watching something, I spend the entire time reading. So I tend to miss a lot. And with dubbed, I tend to get irritated because the mouths are not moving in time with what I'm hearing. But it was quite a captivating series, very well done, very well made. An interesting collection of characters as well, which I really enjoyed. It wasn't, you didn't have your just typical, he's the knobhead, he's the nice one. There were a good bunch of characters. A couple of faults with it. First of all, whoever did the voiceover for the young boy, my God, what were they thinking? It was so annoying.
It's one of those ones where it's clearly an adult trying to do a child's voice.
Doing a kid's voice, talking like this, daddy! It's like, no. Why not just get a child to read the lines? Yeah. That would be a lot better. It was every time he spoke, I thought, shut up, kid. Shut up. You haven't got any lines this episode. Good. But there was an episode dedicated quite a lot to him. So I was like, missing. Oh, no. Yeah.
And it's very noticeable, and it's something they used to do a lot in British television programmes in the 70s. If you had a child, they would very often dub the child's voice with an adult doing the child's voice. And it's so obviously somebody in their 40s trying to be annoying. 8, and it never works.
Also, there's quite a few hot and heavy scenes. But every time there's a hot and heavy scene...
A bit
scene,
of raunch, isn't there?
There's a song that comes up.
Yeah.
And the lyrics and stuff are fine. It's all in English. But every now and then, the singer goes, wow. You're like, what are you doing? But she does it in like a way that's meant to be quite sort of seductive, I think, isn't it?
Sensual.
She's like, wow. And she's like, I can't do... seductive, poor wife, right? But wow. It's like, oh, stop it. Wow. And she does that line almost every single section of the song. So it's not like hot and heavy, one time she'll do that noise.
Yeah.
It is hot and heavy, time. And by the end of it, I was thinking, wow, why? Why are you doing this? That was clever, that one.
That was quite clever.
But apart from that, generally, the story's really good. It's it can get quite graphic at times. The situations that they're in don't feel forced upon either. They feel like they're very believable. There's no situation where suddenly they're in this big sort of lab and they're finding out about the virus and stuff. It's just very believable that these are just run-of-the-mill people.
Again, that's what I like about this.
Trying to get somewhere.
And one of the films we'll talk about later, the hero characters aren't two-fisted soldiers or military or hero characters. They're just ordinary
people
thrust in a terrible situation. And I think I've always liked those sorts of stories anyway, where the man in the street has to cope with the end of the world or some disaster or something.
Sergei's ex-girlfriend has an attitude problem.
Well... You sort of can't blame her, really. I mean, he walked off, shagged somebody else.
But still, she just had a face. You just thought, you're always angry, aren't you?
But then she got what she wanted at the end, didn't she? She hooked up with somebody.
Yeah, but she was doing it to
get
to him.
Going to get to him.
There was a bit where she was on top of him and she was looking at him. Look what I'm doing. She was such a horrible character, that one.
I mean, this is the good thing. The characters aren't particularly nice characters, a lot of them.
No.
The I can't think of the name of the character now, but the businessman bloke, he's very cocky and arrogant. A couple of times...
Lenin
or something. He tries to abandon them a couple of times. He drives, I think it's episode 2 or 3 or something. He drives off I think it's elite, but he has to go back. He goes back for a rope or something. And
yeah.
He plans it's
episode
to
one, I think it was. Where he has to go back for the card sort of.
I think what I did like the thing where the house is broken into by those blokes, and you get that sort of bluff at the end of, I think it's the first episode, where you think they're coming back.
Yeah.
But they're not. It's actually a different house they've gone to, which is quite a nice
thing. It was also quite nice that not one situation doesn't take three episodes.
No.
You know, they tend to kind of get to another situation.
It's quite episodic. It's quite it's quite brutal in places. It's quite ruthless. And it shows what people can be like in these situations, the deterioration of society and how things collapse and the way people behave in crisis when it is about self-preservation.
You know, the freakiest part of it though was the old woman in the house.
Oh yes, yeah.
That got very freaky.
That was quite. That's like horror movie stuff, isn't it?
But it wasn't just with her though. It was with the girlfriend in the bag.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to say too much to spoil anything, but the girlfriend in the bag. It was all very, very eerie and creepy. And then the old woman became very creepy.
Yeah.
It reminded me very much of a better told version of The Walking Dead minus the zombies.
Mm.
You know, they're on the road a lot, but when they're on the road, they don't seem to accidentally stumble on situations that you wouldn't believe would exist.
Mm.
All the situations they stumble on, the looting, the shootings, and you know, stuff like that. It's all very believable, very, very well done. And
I think the look of it all done in the snow and the ice, it's a different look.
It's very Russian, you know, the blood and snow sort of look. It's a very Russian horror.
I don't know if it's a cliched version of Russia. Russia's actually like it's constantly snowing, constantly cold. And that adds to the bleakness of it because the environment is so unwelcoming. So they're going from one unwelcoming place to another unwelcoming
most
place.
Most things, you're watching them American, and half the time it's hot.
Yeah.
It's warm. Yeah. It's sometimes too hot, you know, they're sweltering or whatever, but it was interesting to see, and it's always nice to see something that's not American or British as
well. Yeah, well, as I said, I do like looking at some of these foreign shows that turn up on Netflix, and they are very good.
But not all of them work out like Dark.
Apparently Dark is very good, but I couldn't get my head around that.
The one with the rain was okay. It's called The Rain.
But I lost
it. The one with the rain? Do you mean The Rain?
It was called The Rain.
I think
that's what it was called. Yeah, I lost interest. Not all of them do, but some of them are very good. I mean, the one that I'm particularly referencing was, I don't think it was on Netflix, was 8 days or day eight or something, the one about the asteroid, the German one that was one of my favourite shows of last year. But so it's always worth having a look at these things to see, because there is more to creativity in television than British shows and American, particularly American shows that churn out so much stuff. But yeah, I really enjoyed To the Lake, and of course it's got a cliffhanger ending.
Yeah.
They're asking for a second series. I don't know if there's no word on yet whether there's going to be one.
You never know with Netflix.
But I would imagine they'll do another show, because it is asking for it by having that cliffhanger ending. Mm. Marks out of 10?
8 out of 10.
I give it an 8 out of 10, I think,
We're very light-minded, aren't we?
Mm.
In a lot of things.
In many ways.
Yeah, yes. Many ways.
Many ways.
Many ways. Both many handsome, ways. Too.
Naturally. So that's To the Lake, which is available now on the Netflix channel, all 8 episodes. Worth a look.
Yeah, agreed.
Time now for a TV review. Final TV review in a packed episode. It's more of a little recommendation for a certain part of the audience than a particular TV review. I know you didn't get very far with this. I watched it all. This is Itch, which is an Australian TV series, which was actually screened in January this year in Australia. It's only just arrived on the BBC over here. It's called Itch. It's based on a book written by Simon Mayo, who, as I mentioned, is one of my favourite radio broadcasters. He does what I would describe as an essential film review programme with Mark Kermode on 5 Live on Friday afternoons. And hello to Jason Isaacs, I just want to say at this point. This was a series that was shot in Albany and Perth last year. It's based on a series of children's books that Simon Mayo wrote. And I wanted to have a look at it because I wanted to see what it was like. I've not read the books, obviously, because they're for kids. But I wanted to mention it because I think if you're out there and you've got kids who are constantly stuck on their computers watching YouTube or something, this might be a nice thing for them to look at, which will hopefully feed their imaginations a bit. As I constantly mention, all the children's shows I used to watch when I was a kid, because there were so many back then, The Tomorrow People, Time Slip, Ace of Wands, Freewheelers. There were just loads and loads of these shows that really got my imagination racing and why I do stuff like this today. And I don't think kids on TV have that sort of stuff anymore because they have so many other options. But it's nice to see that children's television adventure series are still being made. It isn't particularly outstanding. It's not particularly different. But it is very much in the style of those shows I watched back in the 60s and 70s. And it's basically about this kid who is unlikely named Itchingham Loft. I don't know what they were thinking of that name. He's a big science fan, big chemistry fan. He lives with his mother and his sister. His father is out working on a mining site somewhere across Australia. And he discovers a new rock, which appears to be a new element, which has never been seen before. He can't identify it. And he wants to work out what it is. He passes it on to his school science teacher. And it just sets off a chain of events in motion. There's this mysterious organization called Green Corps who want to get this rock. And it's like a conspiracy thing. And it's 10, 25-minute episodes. It's basically like an extended chase thing. He's trying to keep the rock away from these people who want it. Somebody he thought he could trust turns out he can't trust. And somebody else comes along he can't trust. It's got all those tropes of this sort of chase story. But I really enjoyed it for what it is. It's not groundbreaking. It's not different. It's very much aimed at kids, obviously. You have to remember that. You don't watch it and think there's stuff for adults here. But I think if, like me, you've got a background in watching children's adventure things, like the Sarah Jane Adventures, very much aimed at children, but I got stuff out of it because of the Doctor Who connection. And I do have a soft spot for those children's dramas. So I think if you do like those sorts of things and you have memories of those shows, I think you might quite enjoy it. It's quite well made. The acting's pretty good for a bunch of kids. But of course, it's got that culture that's in Australia. So you've got
it's kids. Very much Home and Away style.
It is Home and Away style in production and acting. But I thought it was quite decent. And I would recommend it for anybody who's got kids that, you know, who maybe are stuck to their computers too much. Get them to have a look at this. 10 episodes on BBC iPlayer right now, and it's screening on Thursday afternoons. And I read the second series has just started filming. So there are three books. So I imagine they'll do the three series based on the three books. I've got no idea how this compares to the books, because presumably the books were set in England. This has been transplanted to Australia. But I just thought it was harmless and entertaining, and I give it a generous 7 out of 10, I think. I think you only watched an episode or two episodes or something?
I watched 2.5 episodes. Yep. Not my cup of tea at all. Like you said, aim for kids. Yeah. I can see, you know, the enjoyment to it, but I think as a
gateway thing for kids who are interested in stuff like this will sort of lead them into more adult things, perhaps.
It's not something I'm going to rate, because I go very low for something, and it wouldn't deserve a low rating, because it's just one of those things that, you know, it's not a bad show, it's just, I hate that kind of show.
Yeah.
Give me a cartoon, please. Thank you.
Yeah, see, I don't do cartoons. I can't really...
Oh, I grew up on cartoons. Yeah, I came from the 80s and 90s. Well, it was all cartoons.
I grew up with the classic cartoons, the Wacky Races and Dastardly and Muttley and even Tom and Jerry and all these things. But for me, it was all about those drama series. And I think this is in that vein, which is why I was interested in watching it. And
actually, though, it wasn't Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when I was a kid.
It was Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
It was. Because the word ninja
was too aggressive. Because it was too violent for the kiddie winkies.
And yet they were going Keg Robot butt all the time.
That's what happened, isn't
it? Or the real Ghostbusters, used to watch that as a cartoon.
Well, these things were all after my time.
That's always, as bad as saying before my time.
Much as I love Scooby-Doo and Wacky Races and all those things and the Impossibles.
Hanna-Barbera stuff.
I remember the Impossibles. I love the Hanna-Barbera stuff. But I always liked the live-action stuff because it's live-action, it's acting.
Did you ever watch the Scooby-Doo movie that came out recently?
Did we review it? I think we probably reviewed it.
We did review it. You didn't think very highly of it.
I didn't think very good of it at all. No. I think I lost patience when Scooby-Doo called him Rick Dastardly. No, I'm not Rick, I'm Dick. I'm a dick. Yeah, I get the joke.
Terrible. It's one of those that's like, hide it from the kids, but the adults will laugh.
The adults will laugh.
Actually, no.
No.
Nobody laughed.
No. Anyway, Itch is on BBC iPlayer. If you want to have a look, if you have a soft spot for those old kids' shows, or if you want your kids to have a look at something a bit different, then it's out there. And it won't rock your world, but it's entertaining for what it is. Right. that's the last of our TV reviews.
It is.
But it's not the end of the show.
No.
Oh, no. How long have we been going so far, young Scott?
Only an hour and 23 minutes.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
We're flying along.
I know.
This could come in at 2 hours.
I'm impressed with myself.
Let's do a couple of obituaries.
Let's say some farewells. A
couple of fallen heroes. First of all, of course, then the legendary Sean Connery. What can you say about Sean Connery? I mean, they really don't make film stars like him anymore.
No.
James Bond, and I think no matter how much people like Daniel Craig or Roger Moore, Sean Connery was James
Bond.
Ian Fleming said that he embodied the look that he had for Bond when he wrote the stories, and it's hard to imagine that
if the writer says
the book
you created are James Bond, says, you know.
That's the character.
Yeah.
Bond was his breakout role. He was born in 1930, and a Scottish actor who, as people did in those days, just plodded along, getting lots of small roles,
breaking
his name out there. Did lots of little films.
Didn't need YouTube to kind of go, hey, look at that guy.
Well, yeah. He was. He worked to get his reputation. Yeah. He worked to get his work.
A very well-deserved reputation as well. Yeah.
And of course, then he arrived as Bond in the early 60s and changed the face of that sort of cinema, I suppose. Mm. That sort of action-adventure cinema with his hugely popular character that he played for 4 films before deciding he'd had enough. There were lots of issues about him being paid, and I don't think he enjoyed playing the part after a couple of films. I think he felt it was a bit one-dimensional. There wasn't much more he could do with it. So he left. George Lazenby took over, and then he came back to do Diamonds Are Forever. And then he came back a decade or so later to do Never Say Never Again through a different production company. And that's not his best. Diamonds Are Forever isn't his best. It's his first. We got Dr. No, Goldfinger, From Russia With Love, Thunderball, You Only Live Twice, 5. Those are the 5 essential Sean Connery Bond films, and probably 5 of the most essential Bond films. He just has that charisma and masculinity about him. We don't get these days where everybody's a bit androgynous and everybody's, you know, non-binary this and, you know, he's a man, and he was proud that he was a man, and he looked like a man, and he behaved like a man. And you don't get that.
No touch on the Dairy Milk Man, though.
No. Oh, God. No, that was a different level altogether.
One of my favourite films.
Well, yeah, beyond Bond. Look at the other stuff he did outside Bond. Of course, the Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, where he played Harrison Ford.
Junior.
Yep. Of course, he was in Highlander, where he played Juan Sanchez Villalobos.
Completely miscast.
Complete with Scottish accent. Yeah. You've got to love it for that.
Completely miscast. The Hunt for the Red October.
Hunt for the Red October.
One of my favourites was The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Well, it's not a top quality film,
it's the film that actually made his career end.
Yeah,
because he hated making it. He had massive fallings out with the director Stephen Hopkins. Physical fallings out.
There was loads of background.
And
stuff.
He said, "That's enough. No, I'm not doing it anymore." And to be fair to him, he retired and didn't work again. Mm. And you've got to admire somebody who takes that stance.
He's stuck to his guns.
Of course, he got
The Rock.
He was in The Rock. He did The Untouchables, where he won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, which I only saw a couple of years ago. Terrific film. Again, he gives that Sean Connery Scottish performance.
Yeah.
But that was what he did.
He didn't care that he was Scottish.
He didn't care,
Yeah, like Highlander. He didn't care that this Spanish guy was Scottish. No. You know?
I'm just trying to look now again at other things that he's done that I might have... Hell Drivers, that was a damn good film. He did in 1957, a British film about long-distance truck drivers who had to race against the clock to get the deliveries across the country. Very good film. He was in that. Darby O'Gill and Little People. Have a look at that. I think that's just turned up on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
It's about the leprechauns, and it's quite a good little sort of comedy. I don't think it's a musical, but that's very good. Have a look at that. I think you might enjoy that. And then, of course, Bond arrived in 62. And compared to Bond these days, where you have to wait like 5 years between films, Dr. No in 62, From Russia With Love in 63, Goldfinger in 64, Thunderball in 65, and then You Only Live Twice in 67. They just got on with these bloody things, and you know, damn sight more entertaining than the films they do today.
Much more entertaining than the Bond films, yeah.
Diamonds Are Forever then in 71. He did a film called Zardoz in 1974. Very bizarre science fiction film where he wore a very ill-advised and revealing costume, which didn't do him any favours. Man Who Would Be King, classic historical film which he did in 75. He played an older version of Robin Hood in Robin and Marian in 76. Classic war movie, Bridge Too Far in 77. The first great train robbery in 1979. He did a disaster film, we're talking about disaster films later. He did one called Meteor in 1979. Which wasn't very good. Outland, which is a sort of Blade Runner-ish type science fiction film. Time Bandits, he was king. Agamemnon in Time Bandits. So just looking at all the stuff he did, incredible range of
very diverse
films. Name of the Rose,
such a presence as well. Apparently a very nice bloke, bit of a diva occasionally, I've heard.
Well,
but
I think one thing, I'm just sipping a cup of tea. One thing that was a little bit controversial, it's probably quite extremely controversial. He had some, shall we say, interesting attitudes about male and female relationships, shall we say, to the effect that he felt that there was nothing wrong with giving a woman a slap if she spoke out of line.
Yeah.
And he was quite public about that, and I know that in certain quarters, you don't do that. You don't advocate violence against women. But that, again, it's that, it was different times, that thing. That was the culture he was. He was a man. That's the way he responded to.
Well, his wife.
I think he had several wives, but.
I think his last wife he almost lost because he slept with somebody else, didn't he?
Quite possible. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of that sort of stuff.
But his wife loved him very much.
Yeah.
You know,
but yeah, he did have some prehistoric attitudes, and he did say some things that. And there's a couple of clips online that were drawn to my attention a few years ago where he says, you know, if a woman. Chats back then, there's no reason you can't slap her across the face. Yeah.
Okay. It's a very outdated
it's
look.
It's massively outdated, but I don't think you can wipe out somebody's career because they said something that you disagree with. And, you know, it's not something that people would advocate
today. If
you
were walking around the street slapping anyone you saw, then I'd say, well, yeah, that's a bit uncalled for.
So, yeah, you frown at those sort of attitudes, but you have to put them in the place of the time.
Don't do it, Sean.
He was born in the 30s when things were very, very different.
That's the way things
are
like,
I don't think we should take away from...
Besmirch his entire career.
The legend of his career and, you know, the fact that he was such a massive, massive figure in the 60s as Bond. If that was all he'd done, it would have been enough to secure his place in legend. But you know, as you've seen, he's done so much more. And just looking at his list of films makes me think, I'm going to actually watch some of these that I've never seen. Some of these, I don't think I've ever seen Robin and Marion, which is supposed to be a really good
film. I've never seen it.
So,
but a big old salute to the original Bond.
90 years old, so you can't say, oh, you know, he lived a life, and he lived a long life in retirement in.
Very comfortable life as well.
Jamaica or Barbados. So he went out the way he would have wanted to go out, I suppose. But you know, we will not see people like that again.
No
matter what you think of some of the film stars we have these days, nobody, you know, people just don't come along like that anymore. So yeah, we salute the late great Sean Connery, the one true Bond. I think so. Also Geoffrey Palmer, who passed away on the 5th of November, English actor best known for his roles in comedy series like The Fallen Advisor Reginald Perrin and Butterflies. He played with Dame Judi Dench for 13 years in a series called As Time Goes By, which is about these two people who'd had a relationship years ago, drifted apart, and then met up in later life. And it's about their relationship and how their families. It's one of those warm, sort of cosy BBC sitcoms that they don't do these days, but very popular. He appeared in things like A Fish Called Wanda, Madness of King George, Tomorrow Never Dies, where he appeared again with Judi Dench. Again, as I said earlier on, a great British character actor, not necessarily a big star name, although he had lots of starring roles and things, but he was one of those people who always gave a good, strong, reliable performance as the put-upon husband. He had that lugubrious sort of hangdog face about him. Said three appearances in Doctor Who, big stage actor, and I read that he wasn't actually ever professionally trained as an actor. He never went to stage school. He just
became
an actor, and which is interesting. Other people can do those things or were able to do those things. I haven't seen him for years. I mean, the last time I saw him, I think, was in that Doctor Who episode Voyage of the Damned, where he played the captain of the ship that caused the crash. And again, he was 93. So again, a life well lived.
Right, old age.
With a huge body of work, which hopefully will live on for years after him. Geoffrey Palmer. We salute you, sir. And finally, as I mentioned, Des O'Connor. I mean, a light entertainment legend, an all-rounder, comedian, a singer, television presenter, quiz show host, chat show host. He did it all. And he passed away yesterday at the age of 88. Apparently, he was... a lot of people who worked with him said that he was just a very nice man. There was no side to him. There was no big star thing. He performed because this is what he did. But he treated everybody much the same. He was very much... you know, a good bloke.
What people should be.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I don't think that the modern world allows people to be like that because of egos and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I mean, clearly not our sort of, not somebody from our
genre, but still genre, somebody but of
a legend, you know, who's passed stature. Away, and I just wanted to mention him here. That's our obituaries.
Big salute to all.
Big salute to all of those. It's been a difficult year for everybody. We've lost other people like Bobby Ball and Eddie Large. Again, people from a bygone era, and they passed away because of COVID, which hasn't finished doing its work, I suspect. So it's always a shame when people like Sean Connery go, because they're so firmly anchored in our memories of seeing them. Especially for me, I saw him when I was a kid, and it's stuck a part of my childhood goes. But that's what life is about, I'm afraid. It's constantly
does what it does.
It constantly changes the goalposts, and things change, not always for the better. God, I've depressed myself now.
Well, let's save ourselves some, let's get rid of that depression, and let's listen to the fantastic Mr. James Berridge.
James, what have you been watching at the cinema, James?
It's the James Berridge Corner.
Hi, guys. Hope everyone is well over there in TV Zone Towers. Having been isolating due to the COVID, I caught up with a few films I've not previously managed to see. On your recommendation, I sought out Palm Springs and was pleasantly surprised with its quirky indie take on the time loop theme. It was a welcome change that we entered the story not at the start of the loop, but well into the protagonist's personal Groundhog Day. We do get to see a new perspective through the eyes of Sarah, but I enjoyed the jaded but laid back attitude of Niles. The story was original, or as original as you can expect with this subject matter, and the tone was just right, playing it light but with the occasional dramatic, sombre scene thrown in for depth. All the cast were solid, but a special mention must go to Kristin Milioti, who plays a seemingly together but not really Sarah perfectly. It's a solid 8 out of 10 from me. Another high point of recent viewing was the already re-watched Love and Monsters. This is just the sort of monster movie we've been waiting for. Forget your too serious by half Godzilla or Kong. Give me a giant snail stroke toad stroke crab. And throw in well-written humour and a robot, and I'm there.
My name is Mavis, but if you were to write it out, you would write it with a 1 and not an I.
It's not a complicated story, and you can see what's going to happen 2 scenes away. But you really don't mind, as it's told with such heart. The effects are some of the best I've seen for this type of film. No half-seen winged serpent through a storm here. Most of the monster encounters happen in bright daylight, and the effects are well up to the job. Dylan O'Brien, who I have only seen in a few episodes of Teen Wolf, though I know he's been in the Maze Runner franchise as well, is perfect as the lovelorn Joel, who decides to risk an 85-mile hike across monster-infested America to be with his high school sweetheart, Amy, played by Iron Fist Jessica Henwick. Along the way, he teams up with a dog and a couple of survivors who do their best to teach him how not to get killed. It also skips along at a reasonable pace, getting to where it needs to be without any unnecessary filler. Again, this film doesn't throw any surprises our way, and I don't mind a bit. I've already rewatched it, and I think it's the perfect film to escape our current dire situation. It's 10 out of 10, definitely, for me. Now we get to the also-rans, the best of which is probably the remake of The Witches, starring Anne Hathaway. If you've seen the original with Angelica Houston, then you've seen this. The setting has changed, but otherwise it's a straightforward retelling of Roald Dahl's children's classic. Not to say that's a bad thing. Hathaway chews up the scenery as the Grand High Witch and looks to be loving every second of it. Between the two films, though, I think I'd stick with the original. 6 out of 10. Next one I think could be very divisive. The Kraft Legacy tries to live up to the 90s cult favourite original and almost manages it. I've seen reviews for this range from terrible to good. After I first watched it, I jumped on the PC and wrote that it was a worthy spiritual successor to the original. Now, having some distance from it, it's probably gone down a tenth or two. As with The Witches, it's not a bad film at all. It parallels the first craft quite closely for a while, throwing a few but not many original ideas in here and there. 5 out of 10. If you look up the phrase, be careful what you wish for, then this next film could very well be at the top of your results page. Bill and Ted Face the Music. What to say? Some things age well. Fine wine, mint in the box Star Wars figures. Halle Berry. It seems late 80s time spoof Neo and the other one are not in that category.
No way!
Riding on the half-blind wings of nostalgia is all well and good, as long as you don't decide to drag that nostalgia kicking and screaming via a viral petition back onto screens in 2020.
Excellent!
Here we basically have the same jokes told in the same way, and that everyone thought would still be as hilarious today as they were when we actually talked like that. Wrong. Although Bill and Ted travelled all through time, they definitely and positively need to remain in the bodacious early 90s era of dude culture. 3 out of 10. Last and probably least, but maybe not, is the completely bewildering Toys of Terror. A Krampus wannabe that ticks all the wrong boxes, or does it? 79. I've written on the Geeky Sci-Fi group that this is either a tongue-in-cheek masterpiece or one of the worst films ever made, and I still can't decide which side of the line this falls on. The acting is okay, though the two kids aren't great. The story is okay, in a let's throw all the horror cliches at it and see what sticks kind of way. Sinister whisperings, check. Ghostly children in the mirrors, check. Unheeded warnings never to go into the dangerous place, check. You know the stuff. Now we come on to the effects. Some horror films go for the less is more approach, but with a title like Toys of Terror, you know this isn't going to be one of those kind of films. I kinda wish it was though. Now I love stop motion effects, I'm a big Harryhausen fan, and it can be very effective in horror movies. For some reason, not so here though. The stop motion is admirably done, but it feels like a kids' TV show rather than the horror it's meant to be. And I don't know why. Maybe it's done too smoothly. Maybe a little jerkiness would help. There just isn't anything terrifying about these toys. Even when repeatedly stabbing someone in the back, there isn't a sense of dread. And I'm thinking, well, perhaps it was played more for laughs and it's just gone over my head. But then the actors are also straight-faced, and there's nothing funny about any other parts of the film. So, guys, I need your help on this one. They say a problem shared is a problem halved. Maybe that applies to Misery as well. Please watch this and half my misery. Recently I've been watching Peele's Twilight Zone Season 2, and I'm wondering whether I've actually have slipped into the Twilight Zone, and that's where I find this Toys of Terror. It's one explanation. This is either a 1 out of 10 or an 8 out of 10. And just talking about it has given me a headache, so I'm off to down a couple of paracetamol. I'll see you all later. Bye!
Thank you very much, James. Thank you once again for your contribution. Interesting to hear your views of the films that you watch, particularly The Witches, which we planned to review for this episode, but we haven't got around to watching. And ironically, I haven't watched it because you said about itch being for children. I just looked at the trailer and thought, nah, that's for kids, isn't it? Oh, I do confuse myself sometimes. So I probably will watch it because my brother's watched it and says it's very good, so I may have a look at it at some point. Which is not always a barometer of quality, but
I'm just not a fan of Anne Hathaway, you see. She does my head in.
I have no particular
objection. You know, sometimes when you just, you know, she's done nothing wrong to me. She's probably a very nice person, but sometimes you just see something, you just think.
Has she kicked your cat or something?
She might have done.
She might have done. I think
she's
with
a witch, after all.
With me, it's slightly to do with Roald Dahl as well. I'm not a big fan of his stuff. The BFG was such a sickly film a few years ago, and I've never really seen the Chocolate Factory stuff, so I'm not really, again, his stuff was popular.
Have you seen the original China? No. Whoa.
Well, his stuff was sort of after my time. I'd grown up by the time his stuff became popular. so I never went to, back to it.
Really. Oh, you should definitely watch the. It's got you all there, for God's sake.
Too busy to watch stuff like that.
No, you're not. I am stuck indoors.
I've got sleep to catch up with, and I've got bloody stupid other things to watch.
I'm pretty sure anybody listening now would agree that you have to at least watch Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, not Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Charlie and the Chocolate
Maybe
Factory.
One day I'll have a look.
Yeah. If you want a view paradise, simply look around and view it. Come on.
I hope we aren't going to pay licensing fees now because you've sung a popular song.
I sang a bit of a popular song.
Well, that's a bit too much. Anyway, thank you, James. Thank you, James, for your comments. James. Always nice to hear from you. Like I said before, if anybody else wants to send us a voice clip, it's piss easy.
It is.
Just get your phone, talk into it. You don't have to have James's production value with sound effects and clips, which we do appreciate. He makes more effort
than
we do.
Even though he tries to put us out of business.
He makes more effort than we do, to be honest. But no, just grab your phone, say a few words about whatever you've watched recently, any TV films or any books you've read, any games you've played.
We'd love to hear from you.
Any comments about the show, what you think of it? Do you think we should give up and get professionals in to do it? Which a lot of people
or might professional well think. Help.
Professional help, possibly. Mm. And just save the clip and email it to us at tvzoneplus@mail.com. We will play it in the show. Guaranteed instant fame.
Yeah.
How can you resist?
Yeah. James Berridge is being showered with, you know, like contracts.
I wonder what you're going to say then.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a bit of too long a gap.
Or just email us. In fact, here's the thing. Anybody out there who listens to the show, who's never contacted us in any way, shape or form, one of you, just send us an email. Just send us an email. A new name. TVZonePlus@mail.com. Just send us a comment. Because if you don't, I'll just assume six people are listening to the show. The usual six
people.
But
we'd still want to hear from the...
We want to hear from our favourites, well. As we call them. But anybody who's not got in touch with us before, here's the challenge. Just send us an email just to say hello, what you think of us, the show, anything you've watched. Just say hi. Go on.
Hi, hi, baby, baby, hi, hi.
For Christ's sake, do it. Right.
Now the poll's finished, his rant about getting in touch.
God's
Let's
sake.
Go to... The non-cinema.
Yeah, cinemas may be closed, but we're still watching films.
It's
like witchcraft. Although cinemas are open in Wales, but there's bugger all on worth watching, as I've discovered. But we've seen a few films through various means. First of ones we've watched is called His House.
His House.
His House.
His House.
Which is on Netflix. And arrived on Netflix on the 30th of October. And it's the first film. It's a horror, described as a horror thriller film. And it's written and directed by Remy Weeks and stars Wunmi Mosaku, who you'll have seen in Lovecraft Country most recently. Supi Dirisu. And Matt Smith, former Doctor
Who. I got a feeling you slated all of those names then.
Oh, God, yeah. No, I know I've got... I know
Except
I've,
for Matt Smith, no, did it right there.
I know I've got Wunmi's name right, because, of course, I met her.
As you
I
did, think I may have mentioned. Yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned it on the show, but if I haven't, I can tell you.
Now, now you have.
Shall I do it? Shall I tell the people
yeah.
I met her?
Hmm. Tell the backstory.
Several years ago, when I was more active name in the world of Starburst, I used to do set visits and film things, and I went up to Manchester, just outside Manchester, where the BBC were filming Series 2, of their post-zombie apocalypse series, In the Flesh. And I went along to visit the set, met the cast, and Wunmi Mosaku, I'd never heard of, she was in the cast. I think she played some sort of radical politician who was involved in the situation.
Radical
where,
man.
Where basically there'd been a zombie uprising, they found a cure, and they were trying to reintegrate people back into society. But they still looked a bit cadaverous, they still weren't properly cured, they got their humanity back. But they weren't completely back to normal, and they were called rotters. They were sort of known as rotted. And she played this politician who was trying to exploit the situation. And we had lunch on the bus, as you tend to, and we interviewed all the cast. I had a quick chat to her. She was just dashing off to get back down to London for an audition. And we had a nice little chat with her. And it's quite interesting now, because she is becoming more and more successful and more well-known. As I said, she was a big name in Lovecraft Country, and she now appears in this film. So that's me just doing a little bit of name-dropping. Mm-hmm. Because I've met one. I have a badge made. I met one Mimo Saku. Do you think people will be impressed? I think the right people will. Anyway,
right people.
Basically, this film is the story about a refugee couple from South Sudan who've fled the country.
Along with their daughter.
Along with their daughter, so we believe. They get given a place to live while their application to become citizens is considered. And they're given this rundown house in this rather grubby little housing estate. And it's basically the story of how they have to adjust not only to their new environment and a completely alien culture and an alien landscape, but also some strange evil which seems to be following in their wake. It's sort of a haunted house type thing.
Yeah.
But it turns out it's not quite that. It's something a bit more.
It's a very good spin on the haunted house.
Well, I watched it and thought, oh, really bangs and crashes in a haunted house. Do I want this? But it was actually quite eerie. There were some quite striking visuals. There's sort of noises behind the walls, and the husband character, Bol, he's sort of ripping all the wallpaper off. The house is a state anyway.
Yeah.
So he's not helping by pulling the walls apart to find out what's in the wall. And there seem to be creatures in there. Strange things happen, let's put it like
something
that.
Something not right.
Something is not quite right. And we discover what it is. And it's quite clever. And I thought this was actually a very good film.
I really enjoyed it myself. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, very, very much enjoyed it. Matt Smith played a great role in it as well.
Well, it was interesting. I thought, well, this is an odd role for Matt Smith to play. He's in three or four scenes. It's like basically a social worker.
Yeah.
Quite a nondescript role. But he plays it very well. But it's an odd role considering some of the other things he's done, like starring roles in Doctor Who and The Crown and these big roles. Whether he did it as a favour, whether he's connected to the writer, I don't really know, but possibly. But it's an interesting role. But I thought that the two stars, Wenmi and Soapy, I think they were really good. They really,
absolutely fantastic.
And what was interesting, you hear all these stories about refugees and the boats and terrible things that happen, and you become a bit inured to it because it happens all the time. You think that's a terrible thing that happens. But this takes you into the story of two people who have done this in the story and the things that they had to do to get on the boat. I won't spoil the twist in regard to their daughter, but it's quite striking, and it does make you think about what a terrible situation that must be to be in. We sort of sit surrounded by all our luxuries and comforts, and we know that not everybody's that lucky, but we sort of try to distance ourselves and don't think about it because it's unpleasant to think of. But this makes you think about it, it makes you confront it and realize how terrible it must be to have nothing at all, and be in a completely foreign culture and have nothing and know nobody and be disrespected and treated with suspicion, because there's scenes where the local people looking at them with suspicion because they've come to this, you know, they can't speak English. And I thought the whole thing, not just the horror aspect of it, the whole thing was very immersive and very engrossing. And
it's very in.
I don't know if it's enjoyable as such, but I would say it's very, very well done and very engrossing.
You feel very close to the story. Yeah. Close, you know, the camera work is all very close, you know. There's very few long shots of anything. It's all very much in the character's sort of personal space. Really well done. Really nice to watch as well, because it's an interesting and decent spin on standard house horror. I'd highly recommend it. 8 out of 10.
Some real sort of disturbing bits as well. These creatures that sort of appear to be in the walls or just haunting them because of what they have done to be where they are, basically. It's about their past haunting them, and it's done in a much more subtle way than usual bang or something flying in front of the camera,
the music going ba-bum.
So well worth looking out for. It's on Netflix right now. It's called His House. And what do you give it? 8 out of 10?
8 out of 10.
I think I would give it an 8 out of 10 as well. And just a nice twist on what seems like a familiar sort of, oh God, another one of these boring haunted.
Well, when you said to watch it, I was like, oh, okay. But then, as you saw, you realise it's not your standard, I'm a ghost that lived here and was murdered here.
It's a bit more, there is a lot more to it than that. A couple of previews of films which have yet to arrive but are coming out shortly. Be quite fortunate. I'm still on the list of some PR companies, and I get emails about new films coming out, and lucky enough to get screening links for some of them. Let's talk about Greenland first of all, which I think is coming out next month. I've been interested in this because I love a disaster film.
Yeah,
I love The Towering Inferno and Earthquake and all those, but the more modern ones just seem to be sort of cookie cutter films that rely too much on special effects, but forget about the characters. So
you've always got that cardboard cutout buff sort of, I am a hero.
Yeah.
This disaster is based on my career.
Yeah.
You know, that
there's
kind
usually
of
some scientist or some.
Some scientist, some rescue mission.
There's some person. Big. Well, think of San Andreas, for example.
Exactly. Well, that's the one I was ready. Yeah. I was 100% ready to relate this film to that.
The San Andreas, of course, is The Rock.
Yeah.
It's a terrible film, but it's sort of enjoyable in a cheesy sort of way.
Dreadful film.
Yeah. Geostorm, which is worse, also starred Gerard Butler, which is maybe disturbed for this. But I saw the trailer a few months ago, I thought, oh, this looks quite interesting. And it's basically just a story about a comet called the Clark Comet, which is passing close to the Earth. And everybody says, it's no risk to the Earth, but there's going to be fantastic firework displays when the fragments come off, but we're all quite safe. Gerard Butler, who I'm a bit iffy about, I'm not a big fan.
My wife is.
I know, well, most women are.
But that's not based on his acting skills. No.
I've always found him a bit samey, that sort of predictable sort of action hero. He does those films at the Has Fallen series.
Yeah.
Which I've never watched because they look terrible. And this one was actually directed by the guy who did the last one, Angel is Falling. And he plays a character called John Garrity. He's a Scottish architect. He lives in Atlanta. And he's estranged from his wife, Alison, who's played by Morena Baccarin, who we know from Firefly and Homeland. In fact, he was in an episode of The Twilight Zone, it was on recently. And they've got a diabetic son, Nathan. So he obviously something's happened that's sort of forced them to become estranged. Mm. He's trying to
now,
make
them... You may ask yourself at this point, it sounds like they're doing the same old sort of disaster movie, because it always happens. Yeah. It's always a strange partner fights to get their partner back during an apocalyptic situation. But the kid's ill and they might not. But
of course, the difference is, in films like San Andreas, all hell breaks loose and that's the focus. The focus is on the explosions and the collapsing buildings and the jeopardy and the danger and all that superficial stuff. This is a lower budgeted film, and they focus on the characters, and it's so well written and so well performed. And I think Gerard Butler's never been better. Marina Becker is brilliant as Alison, because what happens is they're at his birthday party and one of these chunks of the comet is plunging towards the sea and it devastates Tampa in Florida. Florida is effectively wiped out. He gets a message from the government to say that he and his family have been selected for shelter. They suddenly realise that actually things are a lot worse than they thought they were. Chunks of this meteor, this comet, are plunging to Earth, destroying cities, destroying communities, but they know that there's a chunk going to be landing in Europe in a few days' time that's going to cause what they call an extinction-level event, which is going to wipe out 75% of life.
Yeah.
And they have to get to the shelter. They have to travel across to the airport to get to the shelter. And you might think, well, this just sounds like every other disaster film. I suppose it does to an extent. But the characters are so likable.
It's a lot
so
more well drawn.
It's more in depth. Again, as we said earlier on, he's not a big action hero. He's just this bloke, this family man who's trying to keep his family together when terrible things are happening. The world is literally ending. And he's trying to keep his family together. And I think it works when you've got an everyman character.
Yeah.
Like Tom Cruise in the War of the Worlds film. He was just this working bloke. He wasn't a big government bloke. He wasn't a scientist.
See, the character that always irritates me, and I'll go back to when Mark Wahlberg was in the Transformers. He's just this mechanic, and then in a scene later on, he's wielding an alien gun like he's an action hero. Yeah. It's like, it's an alien gun. You're a regular human. The mechanic that, for all we know, has no experience with earthbound weaponry, and it just makes it so unbelievable. Yeah. Granted, there's giant robots running around in that one, but you still want your human characters to be human characters, believable human characters.
But I thought that
this does it well.
These were human characters, and I think that the whole thing, because the focus is on the characters and not so much on the spectacle. I mean, there are a few spectacular scenes in it, but it's not all about that.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, I suppose, To the Lake, that it's in the background, that the pandemic is in the background there. The meteor is coming, and we see things happening on
lovely
TV screens.
Full shots of it and stuff as well.
There's some great shots when the giant size thing comes towards the Earth. It's like, oh shit. And there's some great scenes that, without spoiling things that happen. It's called Greenland, incidentally, because that's where the sanctuary that they're heading to is, which we only discover towards the end of the film. But I just felt this was just terrific. I watched this on Saturday
really
night and I was just caught within seconds. And I believed in the characters. It just felt more like a documentary in a way than a drama, the way it was filmed. The terrible situations that inevitably, it's not a big spoiler to say, the family gets separated. He goes one way, she and the son go another. And they've got to try and, while the world is collapsing around them and everybody's panicking and law and order is collapsing and anarchy is ruling, they've got to keep themselves together to get back together. And I just thought it was absolutely gripping. Great script. Just loved it. my favourite disaster movie of, God, 30 odd years probably.
Mine too, because I'm very, very flaky with disaster movies. I don't like many of them. But this one, yeah. Yeah, it's up there in an 8 out of 10.
I give it 9 out of 10. Really, really good. I think it's coming out to streaming services just before Christmas. So it's ideal Christmas viewing. Mm. There's nothing much else on the box. You can have a look at Greenland. Highly recommend it. It's just a proper human story of survival against the odds, and I absolutely loved it. I think maybe the last 10-15 minutes it does become a bit Hollywoodized in certain ways, but I didn't spoil it, but certain things happen at the end, you're like, yeah, I'm not sure about that. But I thought it was just a terrific piece of popcorn entertainment with heart and brain. You don't get that very often. Coming next week, in fact, to Amazon, and I think also on DVD, is a film called Skyfire. Again, this is one I'd never heard of before.
It's not one I've seen.
No.
Sit back and relax.
I'll just talk briefly about it. Again, it's another disaster movie, but this is absurd, but great fun. I think there's a review which has just gone up on the Starburst website that I wrote. I'd never heard of this. I just had an email from one of the PR companies, and I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. So I said, can you send me a copy of it? And they sent you screening links. So I watched it online. Basically, this is about set on a remote island called, I think it's called Tianhu Island or Tianhu Island. And there's been a massive earthquake there 20 years ago. And this girl has lost her mother, who's a geologist, in this massive explosion. 20 years later, some bright sparks decided to build a massive leisure complex on the side of a volcano. Duh! However, the bloke who's financing it, played by Jason Isaacs, hello to Jason Isaacs, by the way, he built half of this park and he's getting finances in because it's half completed, but he wants to show the plans they've got for the rest of it. So he's got all these business people coming in, all these potential investors, and this girl who's the daughter of the girl who died 20 years later, she's now a cosmologist herself, seismologist herself, and she and her colleagues know that the island is grumbling. And he says, no, I've been told it's going to be 150 years at least before this erupts. Almost as soon as he said it, bang, volcano erupts. Now, you have to set aside the utter stupidity of building a leisure complex on the side of an active volcano.
It will be 150 years, so why build it there?
Yeah, why build it there?
You're all going to be gone, but the building's still going to be there.
I mean, this is utter nonsense. It's a Chinese film. Jason Isaacs is there as like a... It's all subtitled. So it's subtitled all the way through, apart from Jason Isaacs' stuff, which is all in English, or a strange sort of South African accent which he puts on. It's utter nonsense, but it's such great fun, because this is about spectacle. And there's some great visual effects when the volcano goes up, that people have gone down into this observation thing, down as far as they dare into the volcano itself on this platform. Then the volcano erupts, they go back up in the platform, and there's like a monorail system, and the volcano is exploding, and the monorail is shaking, and people falling out, and the rail shatters, and there's another bit later on where they're out racing lava in this jeep, and they're going backwards, and it's just hokey, stupid, you know, San Andreas type, utter nonsense, but it's great fun. It's just
adrenaline pumping.
It's real brain off sort of. This is ludicrous, and it's got all those emotional things, like the girl is estranged from her father because she blames him for her mother dying, and how they become reunited during the... It's got all those cliches that
take boxing, checking.
But it's not done in the subtle way that Greenland does it in a believable way. This is done in a completely hokey, fantastical way. But as a spectacle, it is real 90-100 minutes of just brain off. Wow. Whereas Greenland isn't about special effects, this is. And this does make you go, Jesus, look at this. Brilliant. It's just nonsense, great fun. And I give it 7 out of 10 for the sheer spectacle and ridiculous nature of it. Also got to quickly mention a film which is out next week called Death of Me. Saw the trailer for this, and again I had a chance to have a look at a screening link. And this is not very good, to be honest. It's a horror film, or purports to be a horror film, but it's such a muddle and such a jumble that you think, what's going on exactly? Mm-hmm. It's about this young couple played by Luke Hemsworth, brother of, and Maggie Q, who's appeared in lots of Japanese or Chinese action films over the years, I think. And they're holidaying in an island in Thailand. They wake up in their apartment on the morning they're due to go home. There's blood everywhere. Something terrible has happened. They can't find a ticket to their passport. They think, what's going on? So they bundle all the stuff. They go to the doctor to try and get home. But of course, they can't get home because they haven't got the documents. So they think, well, what the hell happened last night that's gone on
here? It sounds like The Hangover.
Well, it's, yeah. I've read a couple of reviews that do mention The Hangover. And the guy looks on his phone and there's a clip of them in a bar being given this drink which has got this Buddhist hallucinogenic element to it, and they drink it. And then there's another scene where he has violent sex with her, strangles her, then buries her in a shallow grave, but yet she's alive the next day. So it's like, what's going on here? He goes, well, this is really interesting. What the hell's going on here? But then he just never runs with that idea and does anything with it, because things happen. I know she's hallucinating. So she sees a scene when he's at the dock and he puts a knife across his stomach and pulls out his entrails and it'll flop out. And then she's with him on the beach talking to him and it keeps flashing back. So this drug they've had the night before makes them both hallucinate. So you never know, is this real? Is that real? And the more it goes on, the more you think, well, I don't really care about this because, you know, this is all just some sort of druggy dream that they've been drawn into by this drink that they took. And then it begins a bit, there's all sorts of stuff about like voodoo rituals, and towards the end it becomes a bit Wicker Man, when they're going to be, she's going to be sacrificed. And it just completely runs out of steam. I mean, I watched it to the end because it's nicely filmed. Location looks great. It's like the Thailand and around the islands around this. It looks very nice. And the performances are okay, and the Maggie Q performs well. But at the end you think, well, what was real? It's one of those films where you don't know what was supposed to be real and what wasn't.
Yeah.
Certain characters die and then they're alive, and then people die at the end, or are they dead? And it does feel like a bit of a wasted opportunity, which is a shame because it's an interesting core idea, but they don't seem to have, they had the idea and then couldn't decide what to do with it. So I think that's out next week. I think it's getting a brief cinema release for anybody who's got a cinema near them that they can go and see it in. But I'm sure it's coming to streaming shortly afterwards. It's called Death of Me, 4 out of 10, I think. Not really particularly recommended. I know. Should we mention Host briefly?
Yeah.
Host has been out a little while, but I say finally caught up with it. I don't know when you watched it.
I actually watched it quite a while ago.
Yeah, I watched it just, like I say, yesterday because I wanted something brief to watch. It's one of those lockdown films that have been quite popular during the lockdown, about a group of girls and one bloke who do a seance, basically doing a Zoom seance.
With a professional
seance person. Charlatan, I think the expression is. And during the course of the seance, of course, something goes horribly wrong because one of the girls, for a joke, says, oh my God, it's Jack, my friend Jack. Oh my God, he killed himself. Oh, this is terrible. But then she says, oh, I just made it up because nothing was happening. And then the seance woman says, oh, what you've done, you've opened up a gateway now to a false spirit. You've and something's come through. And something has come through. And I quite enjoyed this. It's 55 minutes. It's quite well. So that sort of thing.
A little horror romp of, you know, it's intriguing as well how it's all done, how it all pans out. But each half a time, because you're just looking at a computer screen almost all the time. Yeah. Well, all the time. You can see all their faces and stuff. Sometimes they're full screen. Yeah. But it's really well done for that kind of low budget sort of filming. And quite creepy at times as well.
Yeah. Well, I think it's quite ingenious, and it shows how people can be ingenious at the time when you can't be creative in the normal way. Make the use of the technology that we have, and everybody's using Zoom, everybody's using Skype and all these things. So tell a story using these tools. And I know that there'd be quite a few films like this. But this was, I thought this was really good. There were some quite nasty little jump moments in it.
Yeah.
That made me go, whoa. And it reminded me of things like Paranormal Activity.
It's got all that.
It's got all that found footage type thing, but I think it was better than that. And I would like the fact that it was only an hour long. It wasn't an hour and a half. I think if it had gone on much longer, you'd have said, yeah, okay, I get it. But there was nice little jump scares, and the tension sort of built up as things start to happen. Yeah, it's got all the stuff like exploding light bulbs and people in chairs being dragged across the floor that sort of you get in these films. But there's more to it than that. There's nastier things happen. And the ending made me jump. Even though I knew it was coming. It was like, okay, oh, shit. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. That's on streaming services now. And I give that an 8 out of 10, I think.
7 out of 10.
I did enjoy that. That's a nice little short horror burst.
I really got to like horrors.
You've got to love a bit of horror. You've got to love a bit of horror.
My wife does, that's why she married me.
Oh, hang on.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Settle down now.
So there we are. I think we're done then.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. Any other business, Scott? Anything else you want to raise? For now?
For now, nothing really, no. It's nice to be back, though.
It is nice to
be back. Nice to actually do a proper recording. Yeah,
it is. It's been...
thrilled!
It's been fun, and we got through a lot of material in how long?
2 hours.
That's pretty bloody good for us.
Yeah.
Christ.
Yeah, a bit longer, obviously, with the edited,
the edited
audios and stuff, but yeah.
By the time you do your magic stuff. Well, there we are. That's episode 75, done and dusted. As I said, contact us.
Great to be back.
It's nice to be back, and hopefully, fingers crossed, all being well, we'll be back to our fortnightly schedule. Subject to there being stuff out there for us to
subject
watch.
Subject to lockdown.
Subject to lockdown provisions and things. I think it's fair to say that if we do go back into lockdown, we probably won't do remote episodes again, because we don't like
that. No, it just doesn't have feeling to it. It doesn't feel natural, like, you know, because right now we're obviously, you know, doing an amazing show, but in lockdown and doing it from a distance, it just doesn't feel naturalistic, it's unfortunately doesn't work out for us.
Doesn't work, so we won't be doing that again. Hopefully we won't have to do it again, but I imagine
we will.
I suspect there'll be something coming along in January,
because
in Wales we've had the brief lockdown for 2 weeks, is it?
Yeah. We had 2 weeks.
We had it before England. I think the idea being that, you know, Christmas would be
free.
Some sort of Christmas for people. But I think that if the rate rises again, it will be. And I think the Welsh government have even said, we expect it to be back in lockdown in January. So we'll keep going as long as we can to provide you quality podcast fun.
Well, it's a goodbye from me.
Yeah, I think it's probably a goodbye for me as well. I've enjoyed doing this, actually. It's given me a bit of a lift.
It's been nice
today.
It's been nice to do.
It's been nice to sort of focus on something, doing something a bit creative, because sometimes it's just easier to sit there and just veg out.
And we do it for you.
We do it for you. So all we want you to do now is just contact us and tell us you appreciate us, or even that you don't like us. Just get in contact with us, tvzoneplus@mail.com. Send us an email. Look out for us on Facebook. We've got a Facebook page. You can pop in there and say hello. Or you can send us a voice clip like Mr. Berridge did for your moment of instant fame and celebrity. It's all up to you. It's all you have to do. And as I said, I'd like at least one person who's never contacted us before to send us a message to say hello. Even if, why do you two try to do this? Just something. Just some sort of sign that there's more than our usual six listeners out there.
Well, it's been a pleasure, everyone.
It's been great fun. I enjoyed it. We hope to see you in a couple of weeks' time. Look after yourselves, those of you who are in lockdown, and hopefully we shall be back very soon. This chap here is
Scott Holmes.
And who am I?
Paul Mount.
That's right.
Goodbye.
Goodbye for now. We love you all.
Love you.
You have been listening to TV Zone Plus, hosted by Paul Mount and Scott Holmes.